Sometime in the far future, podcast hosts are able to reproduce by some new scientific method. They bring into this world a Swedish baby boy on the podcast known as
Trapped Under Plastic, a show that sounds like it's about the Kardashians, but it's actually about two grown men who put makeup on tiny men.
I mean, is it like, are we like the Kardashians? I've never seen, have you guys seen the Kardashians before?
I don't know. We're pretty good looking. I think they're pretty good looking.
I've seen one of them in a picture.
Oh, in a picture.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw one of them wearing the heaviest death metal shirt ever once upon a time, like a Morbid Angel shirt. And so maybe they're into metal a lot.
Wow.
I don't know idea. Anyways, we're here and Alex from 52 Man Shirts is also here. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
If I had access to like the clapping and applause pad, I would right now. But all I can give you is this.
Tight.
A very quiet Vince saying tight.
Yeah, that counts.
That's as close as I've ever been to Vince.
Okay, all right. Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. That's close enough.
Yeah. You don't need any more than that.
Yeah. So Alex is joining us. I think this is the furthest a guest has ever come to Trapped Under Plastic.
Yeah, yeah. And you came here explicitly for this, right?
This, and then he's leaving right away.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're honored. And with that, do you have, well, actually, why don't we start with our preamble topics first, and then he can maybe come up with one afterwards.
Sure.
So last night we played our first ever like real playthrough of Demon Ship. Alex and I did.
Yeah, we did.
On stream. Yeah. What did you think of that game?
I was impressed by your rule reading skills.
Okay, yeah.
Because I tried to read the rules, and as always, my brain just melts.
Just shut down.
Rules.
Yes.
But it's fun because it was like a solo game
mm-hmm.
on a really small. How big was that?
6 inches by 6 inches.
6 inches by 6 inches. And I think when we started to play, we thought maybe we would be killing some demons.
No, yeah.
But we didn't.
No.
It was more of like the demons killed us.
Yeah, dude.
Wow. For about six rounds.
Yeah. That game is hard, dude.
Really hard.
Is it hard?
Yeah. Really hard.
That excites me. That yeah. Difficulty is high.
Yeah. Because like people were saying, well, if you were able to like beat it on like your first session, it wouldn't be very like interesting.
Yeah, maybe you won't play it again because you finished the game. It's like a computer game.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Once you're done, you're done, and you go for the next game.
So, imagine a single player campaign that took you like 2 hours to beat. You know, not very interesting.
Okay. Yeah, right. You want it to be something that you like. You play through it, you realize the mistakes you made, you learn from them. So next time you're gonna have a little bit more strategy, and you get a little further, a little bit like a roguelike.
That is exactly what it's like. Yeah. And it's just like a roguelike game. You make multiple attempts and you're dying and you're resetting and it's super fast. And just like you said, we like learned lessons every time.
Yeah,
so like
definitely.
We entered into like our first couple of scenarios and we're just trying to kill every demon in the room. But that really is not the play. The play is maybe killing one that's nearby you and can damage you, but like avoiding maybe trying to get some of the things in the room, like some of the locked storage crates. But really, you're just looking for the specific room you need to advance to the next part of the game.
Yeah.
Mostly avoidance is the name of the game because the demons keep coming and they will kill you very fast.
Oh, so it's like there's like a respawn mechanic.
Yeah. There's like like one phase of like breathing room when you do kill all the demons in the room. But yeah, if you don't like move right away, like they're right back on top of you.
Yeah.
Good. It should feel like, it feels like you feel very mortal. Like,
oh, you definitely do. Yeah.
Okay. I like the sound of this ghost boat game you're talking about.
We felt especially mortal with Alex's absolutely terrible dice rolls, but you know,
indeed.
That's okay. Not everyone can be an amazing dice roller like me, you know?
Yeah, this morning was the first time I've ever met Alex in real life, and the first thing I thought of when I saw him in person is like, this looks like a guy that rolls shitty dice.
Well, you're right.
We kind of came to that conclusion yesterday that this might be the reason why I don't really enjoy playing tabletop games.
Okay,
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm there with you. Yeah. Damn these dice.
Damn the dice.
I had a couple things. The first thing I want to do, though, is this is we need a christening here.
Oh, we're going to christen something? Uh-oh.
We're going to christen Alex. This is like baptism.
You're not like, going to pour it over my head, right?
What is Alex's tup name going to be?
I'm going to draw a cross in Mountain Dew on your forehead. That is how this works. So dumb question because I'm a dumb
American. Is that cherry?
A dumb American. Do you have Mountain Dew in your foreign land?
It exists. But you go to like the American store.
Oh. Mm. Okay, you have to go to like the souvenir. This is what it's. What else is in the American store? Like big American flags and
weird cheese that isn't cheese.
Okay.
Oh, big cheese?
American cheese.
Yeah.
Cowboy hats maybe?
Probably lots of candy. Different types of candy.
Okay. Well, this is candy. This is liquid candy. So
basically.
But this is Mountain Dew Zero, so it has zero sugar, so it's good for you. And this is code red. So it's kind of like when you're in a hospital and they're like, code red, that means someone's dying. But I'm going to let you just taste it in this nice trapped under plastic mug.
Which is available.
I'm just going to smell it first.
Yeah, smell it.
What is it? What the fuck? What is Mountain Dew code red? Does it smell fruity?
I'm going for it.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Okay. First reactions. Tell us.
See what you don't know, John.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. That's not a good start.
Is that cherry is one of my favorite flavors.
Oh, then.
So thank you.
Okay.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, this is like a maraschino cherry flavored Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
10 out of 10? 5 out of 10? 7 out of 10?
I'll give it an 8.
Damn. Okay. We'll take it. Yeah. We'll take an 8 from the Swede. Yeah. All right.
I'll take an 8 on the Mountain Dew Code
Red. What's the repercussions? Like how much caffeine am I?
It's not that much. Okay. It's not like as much as like an energy drink. I don't even know if they tell you.
You might see some blood in your urine later on.
That's all right.
That's normal for us. Yeah. That's
usually how I wake up.
Oh, it tells me right here, caffeine content, 68 milligrams for the entire 12-ounce can.
Is that a lot or a little?
That's like less than...
How much is that in espresso?
That's less than a shot of espresso.
Okay, espresso. There we go then.
All right.
Thank you. You're fine. You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for making the trip. And this isn't the first American indulgence you're going to have here, because I assume for lunch, we're taking Alex to Tendy Town, USA.
We absolutely should.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
So you get to experience the slightly above average chicken tenders and french fries.
Yeah, that's going to be great. It's going to be great.
And that is part of the whole experience. So this is kind of like when you go on like a cruise ship where it's like you pay $1 amount and then everything's included. The tendies are included in the tub experience.
Oh, yeah.
So,
cherries and tendies.
Yeah, cherries and tendies. you're welcome. We can pick up some more Code Red on the way, and then you can just dip the tendies in it.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on smelling salts, Alex?
I did see that episode.
You did?
Yeah. And
He's reaching into his bag right now.
The first thing that came into my mind was, why are they so stupid? Why are they doing these stupid things?
And the second thing was, I want to try that.
I know of smelling salts. I know of them.
Okay. Have you experienced them?
I have experienced them.
You have?
Yes.
For like their actual purpose? Like were you like knocked out and awoken with them?
No, just probably the same reason you did it.
You're judging us, but you've done it as well?
I like to think that Alex watched that episode and then went down to the American store.
They have it at the American store. Oh, I
think smelling salts used to be like a thing back in the day. They were everywhere.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Wait. Like for a recreational use?
No, as a sort of you'd faint in church because the preacher said something.
And the Lord came over you.
Yeah.
Okay. So back in that day,
and then someone would like.
Okay.
Oh. So this continues our religious themes for this week's episode. Yeah. All right. So maybe if we're feeling up to it at the end of the episode, you know, we can think about it.
All right. Maybe John will get on his pulpit and like start doing a sermon, and then Alex will pass out, and then we'll give him some smelling salts.
I mean, we can riff on some Corinthians up in here. Me too.
The people of Corinth. All right, other preamble topics. I got a display cabinet. John said it was from Grandma. It's a little ornate.
Look,
it's big though.
It was
$150.
Like that's a good deal.
Do you know what Vince's cabinets cost that he has in his fucking basement?
Like $17,000.
Basically, when he bought them, they weren't this expensive. But when I looked at them, they're like $900 or $1,000
per.
And he's got like.
Per.
Four or five of those?
Yeah.
So they've definitely gone up in price, but still, even if you bought them for like $600, that's still a lot, right? Yeah.
Does that include shipping? Because that glass shit is all heavy as fuck.
I think it did, but I wasn't totally sure. But so yeah, I feel like I got a little bit of a steal with a little bit of a facelift here. aka making the whole thing black.
Yes,
it should be good. Nice. Good as new, right?
Yeah, you could maybe put on some of that sweet gold filigree on it or something too.
See, I was thinking about like 3D printing something like that, like goes in like the corners of the window panes and like spray painting like chrome gold and like little accent details like that.
I smell what you're cooking over there.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, so that's big. I like that. Just looks so goddamn heavy. It's the first thing I noticed.
Does look very heavy.
Yeah, yeah. And we needed some help to get it in for sure. It was difficult to get up the stairs in front of the office, but we managed. No one got damaged. Nothing got dropped. No glass was broken, so we're solid.
And it's all like one piece, right? You take the shelves out.
Other than the shelves, it's all one piece, yeah.
Ugh,
I know.
Did you use a dolly?
No, because it didn't feel like the dolly would have really helped. We would use a dolly in between the door and like the office door, and then it would had to have come out. Because like on an angle, it was too tall to go through a door frame.
Oh, you had to carry it.
Just carried that sucker all the way.
Yeah.
It wasn't that far. It was okay.
Can you fit that thing in your van? How'd you get it?
Yeah. It fit exactly. It was 4 feet wide, and at the thinnest area in the van, it's 4 feet wide.
Whew.
So it...
Did you do that math before you bought it?
Yeah, you measured it beforehand.
Okay. That is the kind of small detail that I would forget to do.
But then get lucky, and then it's like, okay, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't hurt to get lucky. So I have one more thing. I have two things. Actually, my daughter and I went to Mall of America last weekend for Mother's Day. And by that, I mean my wife requested for Mother's Day to have the day to herself.
How do you take that? Does that offend you?
Kind of, but whatever.
It offends my wife when I say the same thing on my birthday. It's like, what do you want to do? It's like, I want to play board games with my friends. And she's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. But that's fine. You know, she got to relax or whatever. And then we went to the Mall of America. And we went through, we walked so much. And there is no good nerd stores in the 300 plus stores in Mall of America.
Yeah, there's like Games by James. That's the only thing, right?
And they sell Warhammer. They have the little rack thing where they have Warhammer models and some paints and stuff. But like, that's it for the whole nerd stuff. Like, we went to GameStop just to get a refresher of like, oh, there's a little bit of nerdy stuff. And then she picked out the new Zelda game, so we bought that too.
Oh, nice.
So we haven't beat the old one yet, but then that kind of rejuvenated us to work it on finishing.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
But that was it. And then we walked all around all the rides. See,
there's rides in the mall.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more than just rides.
Yeah.
In the mall.
At least it was
I'm Swedish.
The biggest mall in the world.
Yeah.
It might not be anymore. I'm assuming there's somewhere in the Middle East that has a bigger mall. Now, I don't know if that's right or not, but I feel like there probably is. But yeah, there's like a theme park in the mall.
All right.
So the mall is 4 stories tall and it's massive. But yeah, there's like a whole theme park in the inside of the mall. And my daughter is a giant chicken. We walked around, we took a thorough look at each of the rides. She determined if any of them were okay for her. And after 45 minutes, she determined, no, we're not riding any rides. I'm like, that's fine with me. But you know,
does it happen that she like changes her mind after a while when she sees, she just has to sort of watch?
Yeah. There was one that she really thought looked like possible because it wasn't super, didn't seem like it was going to be super fast. And it was like this, it's like this giant pendulum thing. It's this like massive pendulum, like the size of like a, what do you call those? The big things that they put metal on buildings with.
Scaffolding?
No, like the machines.
Cranes.
Yes, crane. So it looked like a giant, almost like a crane. And then it was a Ninja Turtles ride, which I'm like, sweet. And there was like these little like planes you sat in. And I'm like, okay, you just sit in the plane and the thing will like take you around. Well, then the whole pendulum started going and it goes, whoa, 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 whoa. And it goes faster and faster. And she's like, nope. Damn.
She noped right out of there.
I know. I just think she's a giant chicken, but I think like one day she'll get the guts up to do one and realize the fear is the fun.
Yeah. Right? That adrenaline is part of the experience.
Yeah, but that just got to be on her own terms. Like, okay, if I push her into doing it, then it's going to be a traumatic experience.
Yeah. That she'll never forget.
Yeah, and it'll be tied to me being the one to do it, and we don't want that.
Right.
The only other thing I had is,
Magic tuber. Are you talking about potatoes?
No, not tubers in that sort.
Okay.
No yams here.
Okay.
But so I did that video where I took a magic card and like converted it with Warhammer because it was a Warhammer
thing. Yeah.
And since then, I've had some like conversations with the marketing people at Wizards of the Coast. And out of the blue, last like a week or two ago, they reached out to me and they're like, would you like to reveal a card for the upcoming Lord of the Rings set?
Wow.
So I was like, wow. I'm like, well, I had these plans for doing a video with miniatures and magic cards again for when the new Lord of the Rings set comes out. Because I'm like, oh, there's Lord of the Rings miniatures.
And they're pretty fucking good nowadays, honestly.
Yeah. I talked to Dan about them at the source about what they had in stock. So if we stop over there today, then, you know, I can take a looky-loo there.
Okay.
I had these ideas of like using the art as like a backdrop, right, to do a scene, and even like I'm probably giving away the video too much, but using it in like three dimensions, like a pop-up book. So you know when you do a pop-up book?
Yeah, that's nice.
And there's like paper, but then there's like tiers of paper. There's like a tree line here, and then there's hills behind it and a separate sheet of paper, and then mountains. What if I cut up the magic card art to make like a pop-up book three-dimensional backdrop and then real miniatures in front? That was my idea, so I kind of pitched that to them, and they're like, oh yeah, that's really freaking cool. And they're like, by the way, do you want to spoil a card? I'm like, how this works in Magic is they're Magic content creators. They get cards, and they're the ones that reveal them to the world before they've ever been seen before on their own channels and stuff.
Okay.
And so on their YouTube channels or on their Twitch streams and stuff, they reveal them, and then that's where people get to see them for the very first time, and then people compile like a spoiler list of all the cards that are going to be in the set. So you kind of get to be the first shot. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like the right person for your audience, but like, But in the videos that when people do these, so I did a little research, they're all real short. Okay. They're like a 2-minute video. Okay. They're like, all right.
It's just a reveal, basically.
Yeah, it's just a reveal. You don't do anything else. But I'm like, I'm definitely going to throw in some ridiculousness of why the hell is this guy doing this and all this kinds of stuff and whatever. So I'm going to have some fun with that. So the beginning of June, that's going to be dropping, and it'll pop up on my channel, and people will be like, what the hell is this? Miniature people will be confused. Magic people will be confused. And I'll probably
be confused as well.
Be confused as well.
Can the reveal be part of the diorama making? Can it be like the first part of the video? Or does that have to be a shorter video?
Well, the problem is the timing on that, because the set's not, because this is spoiling what is going to be in the set. So the set's not out yet. So I don't even have the cards to do such a thing.
Okay.
But I can spoil what's, I think I'm going to work in, I'm going to spoil what's coming so people, you know, or link them to my past video where I do a magic card and anything. So
I like the idea. Funny. It's like a old school sort of opera set.
Yes.
Well. Like,
Yeah, I think cool. So. I think it would be fun. I don't know if people will like it, but I am excited to do it. And I don't know about you guys, and maybe this is more of a conversation for the full topic of the episode, but like, I'm becoming more and more where I'm just like, if I'm excited about a thing, that's the thing I want to do. That's the video I want to make.
I think that's a good like clause to have when picking out video ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's definitely something that I am looking forward to doing. I'm like super burnt out on painting display models right now. Like, I'm not going to paint. I painted 3 in the last like 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. And I need a break. And I have one more video that's painting a model, but it's a 32mm model, and it's a video game character from a game that I like called Apex Legends. So that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But after that, I'm like very looking forward to just like making whatever video I'm just excited to make.
Yeah.
So I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah. It's kind of like where directors will do that for movies, where they'll make one for me, and then
one for the studio, one for
Disney, and one for me.
Yeah. And you have to have a certain, probably a level of clout to be able to get away with that. There's probably only a handful of directors that can have the pull to do that. But I'm like, I feel that, you know, when people do that, I'm like, yeah, because, you know, those display models that you painted, I think are cool, and I like the videos, and I really like how they turned out. But if you had me paint any 3 display models in the world that were high quality, like the ones you did, you know, reputable companies like they are, see, I'm S in their D right now a little bit. But they haven't ever offered me any of those videos. So anyway, So, but at a certain, but it's not like you chose, like, this is the exact thing I want to do, or this is a mini I designed, you know, like doing your own Duchess and all that kind of stuff. It's a draining experience, even if a part of that is something you enjoy.
Yeah.
Because there's some parts of every model
yep.
that are a bear
yep.
and you either rush through them or you hate yourself yeah. by the end of the day.
Mm. Yeah. Like the Pizza Boy bust, I wouldn't call it a beginner model. Because there is a lot going on in that model. Like, it's got a whole backpack. It's got things attached to the backpack. It's holding a pizza box. It has a hat on. It has a cell phone. It has lots of details on the jacket. So there's, like, a lot just going on in the model in general. And, like, even if at the beginning you're excited for all those things, when you at some point you just lose creative energy, right? And it's mm-hmm. like, well, I was excited about the pizza, but it's the last thing I painted, and I'm kind of just done with this model. Yeah. Do you feel that, Alex?
I've only painted the one larger model, which was one of yours.
With the
killing the forest creature.
Yeah, yeah. But did you feel that while painting that model?
Because I'd never done one before, I was just surprised at the amount of time it took.
Yeah.
I think when I paint something and I'm in my head already thinking of what the next thing that I'm going to paint is,
yeah.
you know, and I never got there.
Because you spent so much time.
There's still the skin thing. And it, you know, I haven't even done the cloak. Well, wait, I'm on the cloak, you know. And it felt like it took a long time. And I just wasn't used to that.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting experience, but I also wasn't prepared that, you know, I had to like, okay, I'm just going to have to sit here for like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, and paint the whole model.
Just to paint it.
Yeah.
Which was a new experience. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed the fact that there was more of an opportunity to actually shape the model with paint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Less of the surface is defined.
Fun. Yeah, yeah. And stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, it was a new experience. And I think I haven't painted one since. Okay. So I don't know if that means that I like it or not.
Probably not. Yeah. Or at least maybe you didn't find enough of a thing you liked in that first process to like encourage you to try it again.
Yeah, maybe.
Soon
I think what I'd like to try is maybe more of a face, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Not a full, just a.
They make these things called academic busts that are busts, but like the world of busts is getting a little crazy nowadays. Like yeah. models keep getting bigger and bigger. Like you get their whole torso and now you're getting like down to their knee.
Yep.
Like, I'm not sure if you saw this bust on the new Chimera Kickstarter, but the bust goes all the way down to its knee. And it's like, this is just a 200 millimeter model.
Yeah.
Like without the fucking shins and feet. It's like,
I love painting models except for feet.
Yeah. But so with an academic bust, sometimes you get just the head, or you might get the head and like a little bit of the shoulders. And so it paints really fast, yeah. which is super nice.
Yeah, I think there's a lot with the academic busts. There's very few details on it too. Like it's just a well sculpted head and shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then you feel like it is more of a canvas.
Yeah.
You can just like play through paint and it feels less of a stress of like something about especially a 54 or 75 millimeter model. When I'm holding it on the painting handle and I just see all the shit yet to do.
And it's so big too. It's like hard to like get up into some of the areas yeah. sometimes.
Yeah. When we talk about what we painted, I'll show you something that's got maybe the most shit I've ever painted on a single model. And it's a Warhammer figure. But like thinking about doing that at 75 scale, I'm just like, fuck no.
Dude, absolutely not. Yeah.
I'm not doing that. That's too much stuff. I don't know if we're getting to be like old men in this hobby or like.
I'm definitely that.
Yeah. is it like young people assume like that? Is that who they're sculpting for these days that just want shit on shit?
The Zoomers?
Yeah. They're just like, I just need a million things. I don't know if those people exist. I kind of think they don't.
I feel like Vince mentioned he kind of is that person. He likes to paint details. And I was like, there's probably like a line where it's too many details. And so I kind of thought about this. I was like, what if the reason why we don't like to do this is because we feel like we're always painting on a timeline. And if we had like, if we're just normal hobbyists painting a display model, it's like, I don't care if there's shit to paint.
Yeah,
I'm just going to paint it. It's going to be fine.
That's a good point.
Maybe it would make us more patient, but there would still be models that are like, this is too insane. Like I feel like some creature caster models are still like really crazy.
Yeah. That's a lot. There's a lot of bullshit on bullshit.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Creature Caster brand?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what we're talking about? Yeah, like some of those demons are just wild.
Yeah, it's just Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Last preamble ramble topic. Alex, tell us why you're in Minnesota. Like, why did you come to North America?
All right. So, hi.
Hi.
The thing is, I think one day I was on Instagram and I got a message from Dave from Mini Wargaming.
Mini Wargamer Dave.
Mini Wargamer Dave. And it read along the lines of, "Hi, Alex. Would you like to make a video with me?"
Oh.
And I said, yes, Dave.
That was it.
And that was it. And so, Dave invited me to Welland in Canada, which is where the Mini Wargaming Bunker is.
Okay.
That's an interesting place, which is really cool, but it's also very strange to actually sort of be immersed in a Warhammer 40K universe for 3 days.
Like, yeah, even sleeping, right?
I've been sleeping under my bed, just on top of my bed, on the wall, is this huge two-headed eagle.
Yeah, the Imperial
Aquila. Stuff like that. So the Emperor has been watching me in my sleep. I was going to go see Dave. But it was still like, if I'm going to fly all the way over from Sweden to Canada, you know, I might as well go visit you guys.
Yeah, we're not that far from Canada.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, comparatively.
Yeah, compared to Sweden, you know, yeah.
And so I asked Scott, can I come and hang out and maybe, you know, we can make a video and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so then I ended up here.
Yeah.
And it's all still a little bit surreal. There's still like a tingle of jet lag.
Yes.
And there's, you know, you one morning you're home at your table eating your breakfast, and the next day you're in a bunker with the killers, and then, the next day you're sitting on a podcast under plastic.
Yeah, I think the pace since you have arrived has been pretty quick. Yeah. Like, you showed up at 3 p.m., we drove back to the house, dropped some stuff off, maybe we went on a dog walk, and then we were straight into the office, we ate dinner, and then did a stream, came home, went to bed, woke up, came here, podcast. After that, we're going to start writing the rest of our screenplay for our skit, and it's all just very, very jam-packed at the moment. So I can see how it feels a little fuzzy still.
Yeah, but it's fun. But so that's how I ended up here.
All right.
Yeah. Wow. So.
This is going to be like, you're going to wake up on Monday morning or whenever it is when you go back home, and you're going to wake up and you're going to sit down and you're going to have breakfast, and you're going to feel like it was like a weird dream.
That's kind of where I am right now. And you know, when you have that feeling that it feels like I've been away from home for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it feels like I left from home yesterday.
Yeah.
Like that combination.
Interesting.
Which is weird. I usually get that when traveling and then traveling and working a lot. It's not like you just go for a vacation and like breathe in the moment.
Yeah, you know, you're not absorbing it. No, you're not feeling the days move by. Yeah.
It does help. Like, I've been out, I was out running this morning.
Mm.
I woke up at 6 o'clock and I went for a run around Scott's neighborhood for about an hour. And I've been doing that. I did that in...
How far did you run?
I don't know. I found like a golf course. So I ran around the golf course.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Do you like track it? Like climb?
I don't know where a golf course is by your house, so who knows where he went.
Yeah.
He probably went down Larpinder. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I was running around. But I did that up in Welland as well with Dave. Every morning I went for a run. And that's kind of nice because I actually see things somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not just flashing by in a car or in a plane.
Yeah, and you're not chatting with someone at the same time in the car.
It's just I see people out walking their dogs or like taking out the trash, just not like normal things.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for all of the listeners, if you're impressed that Alex was up at 6 a.m. to go running, just note that that's like 2 p.m. his time, that's really pretty slackery. Right?
You should have got up at 1 a.m. actually.
Should have got up last night,
gone on a run and
run for today
in the pitch black. All right, the next section of our podcast, we'll chat about things we painted in the last 2 weeks. I have Alex's thing he painted with Dave, actually.
Yeah, Dave and Dave's thing. Kids.
And so let's go over that first. So it's kind of like
it's
kind of like a cultist guy, right?
Yeah. So I
Can you?
I'll do the long story, which I was going to meet up with Dave, and we were going to make a video, and we sort of had an idea and a script, and I think we kind of failed paying attention to that idea after about 10 minutes.
Oh.
And so we've just been sort of random filming things, not really sure what we'll end up with. It'll be cool.
But that much is true. Okay.
But I spent quite a lot of time at his house with his kids.
Okay.
Painting.
Okay.
And one of his sons is like really into, you know, it's like every 5 minutes he comes up and like, "Dad, you need to prime another mini." He's just churning through the stuff. And so there was different, in the end, we just ended up sitting there painting. And there were there's something that Dave's involved with now, which is, I think it's through with War Games Atlantic or something like that.
Okay.
It's like a Kickstarter or a Game Founder. It's a
Ravage Star thing. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's actually not.
Oh, it's not. Okay, something else. It's a separate thing.
And so it's going to be like cultist miniatures, I think. But on a sprue, it's hard plastic.
Interesting.
A bit like more traditional, you know, torso, legs, arms.
Oh, build them yourself.
Build them yourself kind of thing.
Cool.
And so his son was, he was like a machine. It was like, build cultist.
Okay.
So I was just lining up and then we started painting them. It was just, you know, it was nice to just sit there and paint with like a family.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But also, it's so refreshing to like paint with kids because it's like, it's just about sitting there to enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
And I, at least personally, you know, I can just let go of any shred of like, I'm going to paint something nice.
Right.
The only thing I'm going to do is put paint on because that's what we're doing together right now.
Yeah.
I don't care if what the end result will be. You know?
And what allows you to feel that way? Is it because you're with a kid? Is it because you're just in a foreign land? You don't have your tools and your comforts?
Yeah, and just the situation. It's like we might as well have been like playing a game. Or, you know, it's a social event and it happens to be painting.
Okay. Okay.
You know, but it's not sort of, the regular type of painting situation that I would usually be in.
Okay.
Know?
Okay. So it's like it allows you to change your framework of mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had this, it looks like, that's actually sort of kind of an ogre type thing, like a brute. It's a larger, kind of large miniature. It's kind of like this. And they had a bunch of contrast paints. And I hate contrast paints.
You do?
And I don't really hate them. I just have never learned to use them properly, I think. It's just, I put them on, I'm like, this is not...
Doesn't look good.
doesn't look good.
I know that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there with you sometimes.
So it was actually the first time where I realized like I should maybe wet blend with the contrast paints.
I do see a little bit of that going on.
So like on the head, there's like there's a dark blue and then there's a light orange kind of a thing. And I also started to thin them quite a lot. Like I dipped my brush in water and just put some water on there and thin it out because it was like a Zenithal Prime underneath.
Uh-huh.
So then, you know, so I was playing around a little bit with that. And then I was actually sort of like, well, contrast paints are kind of all right. If, you know, put some blue in the shadows and then warmer tones in the highlights and just blend them together and dilute them and use them. Not just like this is going to be the green color, this is going to be the red color, not just block things out, but actually sort of. And so that's, I mean, I don't know how, that's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And it was actually kind of nice to be able to play around a bit more with contrast paints. Because as I said, I rarely use just contrast paints. I could use them as a glaze kind of a thing after, you know, regular opaque paints and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good little experience.
Yeah. I think there's kind of a deceptive learning curve to contrast paints.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're okay with in terms of like an end result.
Yeah.
Like when I look at most contrast paints, you can kind of tell it's contrast paint. You can tell where there's a little bit of staining, the wash didn't like collect like a shadow would actually collect. Yeah. Where the surface of where the wash isn't collecting, it's like kind of like a paler version and was white primer.
Yep.
Also certain, I feel like red is like a super good contrast paint because it stains the white really well.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But like other ones that are lighter don't do that so well and they kind of look a little splotchy and stuff.
Yeah.
But also that comes down to applying it as well. Like the better you are at applying it, the less splotchiness occurs. So it,
yeah, there seems definitely to be a learning curve. So yeah, it's kind of fun to start with that. I actually moved on to, because Dave had some, what are they called? McFarlane toys?
Oh,
well, yeah, the big Space Marines. Yeah.
So he had a few of them. And so we primed them. And I got, there's an orc version, a big orky dude.
Oh.
And
like action figure size.
Action figure size orc that I started to paint the skin on, sort of trying to do the same.
With contrast paint?
Contrast paint.
Oh, okay.
And that actually turned out rather nice just because it was so big.
Oh.
And the orc skin was so textured, you know.
It's okay.
Rough and there's veins and...
texture is a big thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I started with that and then I left that there and I told Dave that, you know, if your kids don't want to paint this, then you should just have it here at your house and the next time someone else visits... They could paint.
It's the collaborative work. Yeah, they
could paint, you know, a piece of armor or whatever, and just, you know, try and keep it and see if people want to paint it. We'll see what happens.
What it ends up is the collaborative project, the final result.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
You did a lot of painting. I think when you're talking about the stuff with the kids, it's really interesting. Cause I did the same with my daughter too, where it's just like I turn off the switch of trying to think about like how I'm doing this and how I'm going to explain this for a video or how this is all going to work with the rest of the army or how I'm going to use this kind of paint or this technique. And it becomes, like you said, it's just an activity. The activity just happens to be painting. But I think there's a certain level for hobbyists. And if you are watching or listening to this podcast, you are probably amongst us for better or worse, that even if you're subconsciously doing it, and you just explained that where you weren't active in the process, you were experiencing the moment, but you still found yourself into some mode of tinkering, right?
Yeah.
Right? In some mode of like experimentation or some mode of learning yourself. And I think the more you like take that part out of it and just do it without thought process, you realize how that's kind of ingrained with how we approach the hobby. Yeah. And I don't think that you have to do it that way to still enjoy painting or still making good looking models or getting better at painting. But I think some seed of that, whether you're actively trying to learn something new or you're just reacting and seeing what's happening and fiddling, it's like kind of the core to me of improving in this hobby while still enjoying it.
Yeah, definitely.
I can't avoid it. I just, I always want to just try something new. And I don't even, oftentimes it's not even intentional. It could be just like really small things too, like the way you apply a paint, like how much you dilute it, stuff like that.
Yes.
But also it's more explicit things, like on the last model using Tamiya's for washing it. But yeah, it seems to always happen to me. I can't avoid just tinkering a little bit. But what'd you paint, John?
Oh yeah, I had to bring the big case this time. I only have two models in here.
But they're fancy models though.
But the wings on this Tyranid are so stinking wide that he couldn't fit in my small case. And then remember last time I had this case and we went to LVO and the lid came off and it smashed my competition piece? Remember that?
I remember it, but I don't remember how it happened. Also, that Tyranid in the thumbnail looks gigantic.
Yeah, I wanted it to look big.
I thought it was a gigantic model. Yeah. Like a huge like Hive Tyrant or something like that.
Yeah, because it has the wings, you kind of, the ones that have wings for Tyranids are always big models.
Yeah.
And this is like the first small one.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point, actually. I didn't think about that.
So that was the Tyranid was the video was on like doing a test scheme. Kind of figuring things out on one model before you apply it to a whole army and finding things you liked, things you would change, things maybe you just tweak a little bit now that you see it 100% done. Overall, it was like also taking into account how quickly you can do this, right? Because Tyranids have a lot of little bug boys, right? So even in like the upcoming Leviathan starter box, there's like something like, I don't know, 40, 50 Tyranids in that one box. It's so many models. So I'm like, well, you got to give yourself a realistic approach and few steps, but each of those steps have to make an impact. So that model did not take long, but it's like trying to work with the light and dark. The other one, that's Boss Snickrot, which is the new sculpt of Snickrot. And I got a little bit of a story about Snickrot. It was when I first was looking into Warhammer, before I had ever really painted anything and was kind of figuring out what I wanted to paint, the old Snickrot model, which I still think holds up really, really well, was one of the models that really jumped out at me from 40K. I just thought it was so cool. He's kind of like a secret ops, kind of a assassin style orc, which is just so silly to combine those two.
Right, yeah.
And this model is the model with the most fucking bullshit on it. Like his the front side of him, fair amount of bullshit, you know? But then you turn around and he looks like a stupid NPC from a video game that, like,
oh my gosh,
from a Dark Souls game that is like a random freaking NPC with his backpack full of fucking everything you could buy off.
What are you buying?
Yeah. He's even got like an anchor.
Yeah. He's got an anchor. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I think it's supposed to be a
grappling hook. Yeah.
He's going to toss that up. Yeah. And there's like stick grenades, and there's like he's got a big ass another sword. He's dual wielding swords, still got a third sword on his fucking back.
Just in case.
You got to have that backup sword. And, you know, and his whole like mask thing on his head is just so many fiddly little fucking details.
Yeah, lots of LEDs and stuff. And like even his wrists have this very finely textured chain that like wraps around his entire wrist. And
they're all dog tags.
Oh shit! Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And you hide each one of those little beads.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, he's been collecting the dog tags.
Yeah, I love that. That's cool. Yeah.
There is some nice little story bits on him on there about stuff that's not his that I think is really cool.
Nice.
So the thing with this guy was, I understood going into it that fuck this. So we're going to talk about in the after party something new we've tried, and that's kind of it's going to be with this model, but it was. Start with the thing that excites you the most or is going to make the biggest impact, and then work on those cheat things for everything else, because a lot of this dude is like contrast paint or just quick layers and one highlight and stuff. But
really,
because certain parts of it that your eye is drawn to on the front view especially, like obviously half of this paint job is the time-wise is his skin. It took me half the time I did in that, and that, you know, took me like, I don't know, 4 hours, 3 hours. And then I gave myself that same amount of time to finish the model.
Interesting. So it's a 6 to 8 hour paint job.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is, it's just fairly long, but honestly, it is because it was all this freaking bullshit on everything.
Yeah.
But finding ways to where like you can still make it look good. And it was about consciously going through, making that decision from the get-go, and then more or less as an experiment, how well is this going to look? Because typically I don't do that, because I'm assuming if I half-ass it on 50% of the model, it's not going to look good.
Okay,
but I'm like, and actually, I'm
kind of looks fine.
I'm kind of happy with it.
Yeah. Honestly, I would not have guessed that many things or any of those elements used contrast paint. If I had to guess what that video was going to be, I thought it was going to be maybe like an heavy metal orc video. Because like if I look at the backpack, you have so many fine edge highlights on like straps and stuff.
Yeah.
And so do you think that because of your experience painting your vampire diorama, you have now incorporated more of that clean execution into your normal painting?
Yeah.
And okay.
For some reason,
I can tell.
And it almost pains me to say this, and John from 2 years ago would not have believed this. Like, I really like painting. Like
I know.
That.
Yeah, I know. Well, especially the outcome is so nice.
There's something about the clean, the differentiation of materials, this almost like subtle way that everything has got a black line or a dark line between the surfaces.
Yep.
And so I really enjoy doing it, but I also cannot make myself do it on a regular basis because it's a commitment.
Yeah.
And it's like in the video I did with where I interviewed Rahul Kohli, we talked, and I don't think that made it into the video, but we talked a lot about the heavy metal style, because that's how he wants to paint.
Yeah.
Like, that's how all he paints every single figure, and that he just really likes how it looks. He really wants to get good at it. And I'm like, if that's where your desire is, follow that and don't fight it. And he goes on to say, it kills me how long this takes and how long it would actually going to take me to finish an army.
Yeah, full
like
army.
In this style.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's why you don't see those armies outside of the pages of White Dwarf.
Yeah.
Because people don't do it, because you lose your fucking mind.
It's like Darren Latham, the guy who is like a huge contributor to the like that style. Like, do you know how he paints his Ultramarine Silver Skulls army? He basically puts them in silver with a rattle can. He does some form of washing. He does an edge highlight or two, and that's it. Like, he does not paint them like the studio team to finish his whole army.
Yeah.
So you can't, I guess you could do that. You could like commit yourself to one project for a long time and be done and be super proud of it by the end of it. But I mean, I can't do that. And I imagine most people would struggle.
I just lose it, like lose interest. I've been doing that with my Stormcast army.
Very stylistic and unique and cool.
Yeah, but it's still been like, it's still been like 2 years and I'm half done with my 2,000 points. It doesn't happen because it takes time, and then I'm like, no more Stormcast now. and then I get like, oh, I want to paint one, but it's not the same thing as I'm going to finish an army to play a game with.
Yeah,
it's a different type of project.
Yeah,
it's just,
and I think that approach is the right approach. I think taking it as this is a project that at some point, I'm not going to put pressure on myself as to when. At some point, I'm going to have this done and I'm working on it, but I'm not putting the pressure.
Usually when they release a new game.
Yeah.
So you start a new one.
Yes. So, but also by that point, the ones that you have painted, Alex, are no longer going to be good in the game, and you're going to have to paint different ones instead.
That's what happened last time.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to enjoy it for the project, for the sake of the project, not for the sake of playing them at the table. Yeah. And also, there is a level of, like I know when I did my Boner Boys, there was a level of satisfaction in the quality that they were done and having so many done that I felt like if I needed to bring in another unit or paint another hero, I could do it in the same style, because luckily for me, it's all documented on the internet. I've rewatched my own video to remember how I painted them. But like it, the task feels now more easy to accomplish now that you've done that. But that first haul, the more you put the pressure on yourself from a timeline perspective to play with them painted and stuff, the lower you need to put the bar for yourself on the quality of the final product. Because they're still gonna look cool when they're all painted on the table. Trust us, they're gonna look cool.
Yeah. I kind of feel like to be able, maybe this is not true, but like, for me to be able to cut corners and like know like what kind of scheme would look good but not take a lot of time, I still have to spend a lot of time up front figuring out like what makes the model look good and then make the paint scheme efficient. So I can't just skip straight to the efficient paint scheme. I kind of feel like I'm like just shooting in the dark a little bit. It's like, oh, did that work? It's like, well, no, it didn't. And if I have to change what I attempted on that first one, it's going to look very different from the first to second one. So I kind of need like this masthead that I spend a couple hours on that I then follow for all my faster attempts. But I want to talk about the Tyranid.
Yeah.
I love the inverted idea you have going on. Like, the top of the wings are dark, the bottom are bright. The parts closest to the recesses for the chitinous shell are orange. The first boy parts are black. And you even went one step further, is that those hard shell is glossy and the recess is matte. And so there's a lot of contrast going on, multiple kinds. And I think that was really effective for, like, you know, making it look good in a shorter amount of time, probably.
Yeah. And this is the first time I'd ever used like gloss varnish to like gloss up a specific part of the model, other than maybe like we've probably all done it with like a gem or something like that, but I never done it with like a whole thing. And it took a lot of inspiration from looking up, you know, xenomorph aliens, mm-hmm. and typical Ridley Scott alien and stuff. And they have that slick look. And I'm like, what if these in the chitin parts? Because by and large, Tyranids have a nice balance between the fleshy bits and the chitin parts. Mm-hmm. And so I think, boom, we can do a contrast there, right?
Yeah.
We can go real light overall for the fleshy bits and real dark with the chitinous bits. And then I added that glossy black over all of it. And I did two coats of gloss varnish over it. And I'm like, it's so fucking glossy, you can't even see the details of the plates and stuff. And I'm like, okay, let's, I don't know what to do here. But then I'm just like looking through, I look through like all my oils and like my enamels and stuff. Cause it's like, I can't, if I'm going to do something that's going to make this look better, it also needs to be a quick step. Cause if the point of this is to replicate it, it needs to be a fast thing. So I found something called crusted rust deposits.
Crusted rust deposit?
I've got like
an AK thing?
Yeah. Okay. I've got like three different colors of it. So there's like a really like a almost like a reddish brown, there's a mid orange, and then a bright orange. So it's like you can build it up. And this stuff dries like uber matte.
Okay.
And so I just drew a line where the plates met, and then I fuzzed it off with a makeup sponge. So there was a little bit of a fade, so I wasn't just, it's very hard for me to, like, if you're going to be quick too, you don't want to like pin line everything.
Yeah.
So like, fuck that. Just slap it on, rub it off. And it did differentiate some. Is it awesome and perfect? No. Does it look cooler than it did before? Yes. That's a victory. It created another level.
I think it looks awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it looks cool too, but the comment section of YouTube.
What did they say?
They're like,
what the fuck did they say?
Oh, man. That's a funny thing is like, whenever I don't know if you guys get this, but typically if I'm experimenting with something, and the part of my storyline is to talk about that in the video.
Okay.
It's like, I think it's important because I think there's a certain amount of stuff that happens in a painting video from a viewer's perspective that they think you already know it all. They think you have it all figured out.
Yeah.
And it is nothing you've said or done, and it's nothing that they've consciously gone about thinking that. But if you think about it from our perspective, if like I watch a video on how to fix a drain in my sink, yeah, I assume that the guy that did a video on it knows how to do that thing.
Yeah, or like make a certain kind of food, right? It's right, like, yeah, you're following a recipe of some kind, right?
Right. So I've go out of my way to talk about either my failures, my experimentation, the fact that I've never tried this before, because I want people to feel that that's okay. Because we live in the environment in this hobby of needing a step-by-step recipe book to tell us exactly how to do a thing. And people, especially newer to the hobby or that are more on the gamer side, they just want you to give them the fish. And I think it's more important to talk about the fact that the process of learning to fish is just that, and we're all on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
When I've done that, the more that I do that, and I did it in that video, the more people come out of the woodwork with opinions because they feel, because I don't know it all, that
unsolicited feedback,
that their advice is very, very valuable for me to learn. Yes.
Right.
Which is fine. It doesn't bother me. I do not lose sleep at night. And some people are really good about it. And some people are like, oh, that's really cool. I kind of think it would look better like this. Or what if you'd have done this and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, they're thinking out loud and that's cool. But sometimes you get people like, you fucked it all up when you added.
It comes across critical.
Yeah, yeah. You
should have glossed varnished it first.
Yep, exactly. So it's like, oh, it's all good.
So when you're painting, Alex, do you find that it's largely experimental, or do you like to have a recipe that you follow?
It's largely experimental, and I'd say that pretty much most of my videos are that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually film the experiment, and if it works out, I pretend like I knew what I was doing. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll do what you did and say, I'm experimenting.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like that. But I find what you said, John, is the same as sometimes I just can't be bothered with, because I do experiment quite a lot with oil paints and, mm-hmm, and things like that. And some kind, I can't be bothered with explaining all the steps, like why I didn't varnish first, or mm-hmm, why I varnished first, or why it was a gloss varnish, or why it was a satin varnish. I just do it because mm-hmm, I just want to say, oh, this is what I did this time.
Yep.
And then, very often it's like, you should have done this. It would have, you know, in the comments, if you would have done it this way, you would have, and I try and say in the video, it's just like, this is just the way I wanted to experiment this time. Like I don't actually, which is it's a bit hypocritical. I actually don't want to watch a video on YouTube about how to use oil paints on miniatures. I just want to goof around with it for 6 months and find what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
is that what you like to watch too on YouTube? Like whether it's mini painting or other, you like to watch something that's more experimental and more about the learning process, less about a specific task?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
As long as I'm not trying to fix my sink.
Or yes. That's important. Yeah. We don't know how to do this, but we're going to give it a shot. I think we need these tools, but we'll figure it out. Join us on this journey. Exactly. It's like, what the fuck is this? Who's this for?
I think that's probably a whole subgenre of on YouTube of that. Of just like a guy. Just
experimental
like,
plumbers.
Just being like, hey, I don't know how to fix a lawnmower. Let's do it today.
Yeah, no, but I think it's a great way because I've stumbled upon things that I've then made videos on because I think like, wow, this was great. People should know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never have stumbled upon that if I wouldn't have just been experimenting.
Yes.
You know, so for me, that's a big part of the thing. John, by the way, I had a question. Did you make the base for the Tyranid? With the there's like yes, eggs
the,
and
the
stuff.
Little
yeah. little eggs.
Yeah, yeah. I love
how did you do the
eggs.
Little eggs and things?
Okay, so there's two big eggs and those are just little ball bearings that I had sitting in the room for paint shankers.
Nice.
I was like, I need a little circle, and then the little there's little tiny eggs that are like thrown around them. Those are 6 millimeter or point 0.6 millimeter glass caviar, which you can buy on Amazon, which I have a link to in my video description
there
that you can use my affiliate link to.
There you go.
But they're great, and I was just like, okay, so. This thing, you know, they're bugs. Bugs have eggs.
Yeah, of course.
Egg sacs. Yeah. And so then I used some of that 3D printed off some of the epic basing stuff. You throw down some Milliput. You kind of squish out these rocks coming out, kind of make it moderately bowl-shaped, push down a couple of the big rocks, put in some super glue around it, and sprinkle on the little eggs and let it dry. And then that's got gloss varnish on it as well, obviously. Yeah.
I use nail acrylic nail art beads, and I also have an affiliate link for that down in the description. No, I'm just kidding, I don't. But yeah, I think it's probably the exact same thing, just with a different name.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a great idea. The ball bearings. That's a great idea.
So I needed something roughly that size, and I was too lazy to go check out my shop in my garage to look for stuff. I'm like, I gotta have small circles. Aha! I've got those things that I use, ball bearings that I use for paint shakers. I switched over to like. Plastic ones or certain ones that aren't metal. I stop using the metal ones because there's all the paranoia around
rust and stuff.
Rust and shit. Yeah. But I will tell you this. My original Citadel paints that I switched all the way over to droppers. So when I first started painting, like I don't even know if I had painted a model yet. I switched everything over to dropper models and it was like 200 Citadel paints. What I did there was I just went to the Menards, which is a big box hardware store, and I bought little, like, I don't remember what they were, little hex bolts or something that were stainless steel.
Yeah.
And I put them all in. And then somehow I went on the YouTube rabbit hole or something like a year or two later and people saying, oh, those eventually will rust if they're sitting permanently in liquid.
You
like
put
that.
Hex bolts in a paint pot.
Yeah, just like the little hex.
One of the best things with that is that they don't actually get stuck in the dropper bottle.
A nut. A nut.
Okay.
Yeah. A nut. Okay. So that it doesn't plug it, and there's a good amount of weight without being big.
Oh, because there's a hole in it.
There's a hole in it.
And it's not round, so it doesn't, you know, when you squirt and you're actually just shooting the little round ball into the...
No, that's how you blow up, your tip blows off, is if there's a thing in there that gets stuck.
Okay.
The other thing, well, I got the cheap little shitty Chinese bottles get clogged all the time that I have them in, so it's not entirely that I've gone without... any repercussions to this. But anyway, that was when I started painting. So that was 6-7 years ago now. Not a single one has had any issues. And I figure after 7 years.
That probably has to do with the quality of the stainless steel.
Yeah.
So like
coating on it.
It probably happened to people because it was really cheap.
Yes.
And then there's...
You didn't get them. I got the most expensive ones at Menards. But if you don't know what Menards is, it is like the Walmart of big box, you know, hardware places. So they're not exactly known for their quality. Especially when you get down to things like that, like their screws and their nails and everything. That's all like their own brand in-house stuff, which is the questionable quality stuff. Now, if you buy like a Milwaukee drill there, you're fucking good.
Yeah.
Because Milwaukee is... the goddamn best. But if you buy their stuff, and that's where I was concerned, like, oh shit, I bought freaking Menards nuts. I'm done. But I bought their most expensive ones, which they only had two options. They had like stainless steel and like stainless steel, like grade two or something. I don't know. There was a number associated. I'm like, this one's more expensive. It was like, ooh, this cost me $3 instead of $2.25. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'll buy those. But that's been fine. And I have a lot of the different off-whites in GW, you know, the flayed one flesh and Xandri Dust and the Screaming Skull and all that shit, which I'm like, if something's going to go, I'm going to notice that color.
Yeah.
Change.
Did you just do every single pot in the range just so you fucking send it? Or did you do one first to see what would happen over like a month and then do the rest?
No, I just did it all. that is the story of my life. Is if I decided I'm going to do something, I just do it all, and then I haven't thought it through well at all.
okay.
And I've suffered greatly many a time.
All right. Last but not least for what we painted is meat.
Yeah.
I painted Asandra, a display model. She's just super glued to the base, so don't touch the model too much. It might pop off. But like, I think this is the close to speed painting a display model I've ever come. So I did try very hard on the whole head assembly, and also pretty hard on the skin.
Because that's what you started with. So you can do more finessing with it, with the airbrush and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about that.
Yeah. And then everything else is not a whole lot of work was done. I did do more airbrush work on the cream cloth as well, kind of like painting like Sergio Calvo or like Rafaela Pica or like our favorite Australian Big Deno, where you kind of paint these scratchy layers of highlight and then you blend it with an airbrush. I did that on both the skin and the white fabric, and that went a lot faster on the main torso body as opposed to the head. The head was all brushwork, so it took a little bit longer. I struggled with the eyes on the model a little bit because they felt like they were not planar. They felt like one was a little bit higher than the other.
Oh, you're right there.
And so in order to fix that, I had to put more of a recessed shade on one and less of one on the other, so they kind of like match up more in the middle. And I think because of that, her face looks a little swollen because her eyes look a little kind of like small and her cheeks are kind of big and puffy. Maybe her lips also contribute to that swollen look. But I kind of struggled with that a little bit. But otherwise, really happy with the dragon scale freehand stuff. And I guess the overall effect of the model. I think the coal green and magenta thing is a little kludgy. It's a little just like clowny. But I tried it out.
I think seeing it all done and in hand, I like the green and what you did on the helmet. It really came together well. When it was, you sent the pictures where you're just working on the face, I'm like, well, that's a lot of colors.
Yeah.
When it all comes together, it fits, and you go in really subtle and in the other colors, right? When you have in a lot of neutrals with the cream colored cloth,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you just get all this fucking filigree bullshit.
Oh, there's so much, dude.
Not adding a bunch of extra colors there, and then bringing back the green as your like your outline color, shadowy color on all the filigree stuff, like
yeah, like you mentioned earlier, the GW style, which has like this very formulaic approach to every single part of the model. It's they treat every single part of the model the same way. And it's like everything gets some amount of recess, everything gets some amount of like a nice solid base coat, maybe a layer, and then like an edge highlight. And so it's like when you think about that, and you think about the armor on this model, it's like ain't no one recess shading all this bullshit, and then putting a layer on and then highlighting it once or twice. Like that is going to be so hard to do on how detailed this model is. And so I just had to pull some punches.
I appreciate that there's a couple things on here. You just said, fuck this.
Yeah, I absolutely did. Yeah, absolutely.
Because unless you're doing exactly what we're doing, where I'm like 6 inches from my face.
Yeah, you're looking at the back of the model. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, there's more filigree bullshit.
Oh, there. Yeah. So on her back, there's that shit. I just fucking didn't paint it straight up. And her scabbard, too. I was like, fuck this shit. I gotta get this done. Yeah. I didn't show. Like, this is the closest I've ever come to not painting the back of the model, like I've heard some YouTubers do. I didn't paint the scabbard or, like, the ribbed details on the back of her dress. Because I had to be done.
It doesn't take anything away from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you experience what the model is, without that. And yeah. it's a thing, you know, as obviously you're saying recently with doing the three in a short period of time, like the value of the final product you're trying to create, which is the video, is not lessened by you not doing those two.
Yeah, 100%. Right? And like, if I want to do something with this model, like if I want to like bring it to Monty Sansovino, like I will absolutely go back and paint those things.
Right. It is not anything overly. I'm a little bit upset that Scott, that you didn't re-highlight all of the trim on all of the cloth that is.
Oh God! Yeah.
The shallowest detail print ever.
Yeah. So that. the gold trim around the cloth all has this very. This very intricate weave on it, and it's very shallow, but it's there. You can see it in the cast, and it's just like there's no one that can do this. No way.
Yeah. I've got a question, because you were saying about the colors, if it was,
yeah,
if they clash, or it feels, if it's a little, too much, and
they're supposed to clash, yeah, but like it feels a little clumsy,
because that's what I'm I usually paint quite a lot of, like, just on impulse.
Okay.
And I think when you're sort of coming up to this level, there's a lot of thoughts in like the scheme and mm-hmm. complementary colors and all of these kind of mm-hmm. things.
Yeah, sometimes, but yeah.
I enjoy sometimes when there's a story. So like whoever she is, mm-hmm. her like regimental colors of the armor she's wearing is green. Mm-hmm. For a reason.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to do with what you know about color theory.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
It's sometimes a little bit of both, right?
How often do you guys think, like, because sometimes I feel that miniatures are sometimes, like display miniature painting is so pleasant on the eye, because you don't want to clash. You don't want to do the wrong thing. Whereas sometimes maybe like a heraldic, you know, outfit, or well, like who knows what an elf colors would wear on their armor. Like it could be more freaked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it could be something that clashes with what we think is correct.
Right, yeah.
But we don't do that much.
It's hard to reconcile that. I don't know how you do that, right? Yeah. Like in this instance.
I like it. For me, the armor is like, oh, wow, she's like, she's from the troop that they're out in the forest. They need to be green. You know, I get that kind of vibe.
Yeah. I was like very dragon inspired. Yeah. I was like, for some reason when I thought of a dragon, I thought of it as being green, which is why I picked green. And then I picked the skin because of a hue contrast. So it's a little bit of both for me.
Yeah.
I picked the green for more of like a narrative reason, and then the rest of the model kind of fell in place for more color theory reasons. Yeah. But yeah. I'm happy to be done with it, and happy to kind of be on the other side of painting these three display models and on a greener pastures. But yeah, I'll probably be taking a little bit of a break from the big fancy models for a bit.
That I can understand.
I just need diversity. I'm sure you guys all need diversity as well in painting. Yeah. So yeah, that's us. That's what we painted. What'd you paint? Let us know in the Facebook group, which you can find linked down in the show notes below.
Yeah, you can share your pictures of it even, and you can ask for feedback if you'd like it, or you can just say, they told me to post this on the podcast, so I'm posting it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the Swedish guy won't come back.
Bork, bork. All right, before we get on to the main topic today and dig in with Alex, we wanted to spend just a moment talking about somebody in our hobby that has recently passed, which is Kathy Wapple, and talk a little bit about her and the great impact that she's had on our miniature community, as she will surely be missed. So, Scott, we've done a little bit of digging and just wanted to talk a little bit about Kathy. I think maybe first you want to talk a little bit about how most people may know her from Adepticon.
Yeah, so Kathy and James have this setup at Adepticon called Fort Wapple, which was, I don't know how Fort Wapple came to be. That might have been cool to figure out the history of that, but it was basically, it's an area for painters to go and paint. And the cool thing about it is that the paint is all freely available. There's like a rack of Reaper MSP paints. And so you can go through and you can paint there. And it's also open 24/7.
Yeah.
And you'll often see James there at 3 a.m. in the morning, still painting away. I've heard stories from hobbyists about how they hang out with him super late night and are still painting. So yeah, those two were a huge like force of nature to get that to happen, which is why it's named after them, called Fort Wapple. And it's like, it's such an awesome place at Adepticon, and a place that we kind of always congregate at whenever we need to find someone, or if we don't know where to go, or we want to like meet someone, we kind of always talk about going to Fort Wapple, or kind of always making a round around Fort Wapple to see who's hanging out there and see who you can chat with. But it's like a great, cool cultural part of Adepticon that the Wapples were very influential in.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's always the anchor, right?
Yeah,
it is. If you're a hobbyist, more on the hobby side, or a split between hobby and gaming, it would always can be your anchor at Adepticon. And I always was interested in the dichotomy between James and Kathy, because they were both mainstays there. And James was just different than Kathy, though, because James was someone that everyone came to, because James is always painting. But he'll always talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And he will carry on and have a great conversation with him for a minute or for 5 hours. And he's just happy to do that, but he is always working, right? And he will be talking or explaining to something to anyone that is willing to listen while he's there. So he has always had like his spot, right? There's always a James spot. And Kathy was different. Kathy was always there, always around, but Kathy would be the person that would come to you, right? Mm. So she would come around and she would come talk to old friends, or she would be introduced and meet new friends. And she would be the person that almost like would bring everyone in. And then once they were in, they're stuck in the James flytrap, right? So she is the most warming, the most welcoming, the most like encouraging person. That it's like from the get-go, we in the community of miniature hobbies and content creators and YouTube videos and Twitch streamers and everything, there's been a kind of a wonderful elevation of the welcoming nature and the encouraging new people and bringing them in. And I really think Kathy was one of the originators of that. So
yeah, and a couple cool things about Kathy. She's won 3 Golden Demons in 2007, 2008, and 2009. We can have a lot of these things linked down in the description if you want to check them out. Dark Sword made a tribute to her, and it sold... Sorry, Reaper Bones made a tribute model, and it sold 1,000 models. So that's freaking awesome. She also had a cool interview on Tabletop Minions, the video called 6 Questions from Pro Painters, where she describes her most memorable mistake and also where she finds inspiration. And also, she was heavily involved in the More Than Dice podcast. She replaced Seth starting on episode 14. And so there's tons of content out there that involves Kathy. So that's kind of honestly one of the cool things about the current time period we live on. While her physical body did move on, she's kind of immortal in a way on the internet. And so you can go and enjoy all the lovely things that we came to know Kathy about on the internet right now, if that's something you care to do. And we'll have it all linked down in the description for you to check out. So our hearts go out to the Wapples for the unfortunate passing of Kathy, but you will not be forgotten. All right, so on to the main topic, which in this case is just all about Alex.
Yeah, when I got here, Alex looked at me like a child, asked, just, what do I do? And Scott's like, what are we talking about? And I'm like, listen, boys, we're just gonna put a quarter in the machine and we're just gonna let it go where it goes.
Yeah.
So I don't know where to place the quarter, Alex, but...
Yeah, we want to talk about you. So first of all, let's get a little bit of a shout out going.
All right.
What's the name of your channel? Where can people find you on various social media platforms? What kind of content do you create? Give us an introduction.
This is good. So I'm Alex on 52 Miniatures.
Mm. Why 52?
Why 52?
Yeah, this is been asked so many times that it is now become its own myth.
And so
I try and make up a new story every time someone asks.
Good.
Go.
Good. Okay, let's see.
But I've run out of ideas.
Okay, I've got one. I've got one. Okay,
please.
All right.
The intro is starting with John making up the origin of his fucking YouTube channel.
This is the origin story.
No, yes.
Okay, so Alex is sent from the future.
Yes.
And in his future, he is sent on his deathbed,
yes.
Right? And he's sent back in time to make a massive change in the world. However, he dies right at the right before he's sent back in time, he's about to die of
uncomfortable,
a very massive brain aneurysm. And it's as he's finishing the 52nd miniature he's ever painted in his life.
Wow. Yes.
So the story of his channel is to change the future of the world by the time the 52nd miniature is painted. Yes.
Wow. We're going from darkness into bright.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
And then at the end, you still die.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. Yeah. You can't change the future.
So which model number are you on?
48. Oh, shit.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd stop painting for a little while. How are you?
So, yeah.
Feel free to use that one.
And that's on YouTube.
Yeah, use that one again. Use that story.
Yeah, no, it'll circle around. So that's on YouTube. I've got a... the channel's called 52 Miniatures. There's an Instagram as well.
Okay.
I mean, I guess my videos are... See, I started making videos... I'm not really sure when, 2 or 3 years ago, something like that. And because I come from a film sort of background, I work with still photography and film photography, combined with the fact that I have in the past I've had other hobbies that I've turned into work. And so when I started making videos, because I just wanted to, I don't really know why, it was just I should just see how YouTube works. Mm-hmm. It was very innocent. I swore that I would not put any effort into making videos.
How'd that work out?
And so that was like, I just tried to do it. I just put a camera, you know, filmed my hands, painting miniatures. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, I'm using the red now. Now I'm using the blue, you know. And then I got bored.
Dude, that's my same thing. I get like, when I figure out a process, like a video process, I get bored and I need to change it. It's like, I don't know what that's about.
And then I think sort of a little bit hand in hand with the pandemic, I had more free time. I was at home, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I lost tons of work because, you know, my work was about meeting other people and taking pictures or filming them, you know. Okay. And so when you're not allowed to meet other people, it's bloody difficult to be a photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I just like, well, I need more of a creative output. I've got all this gear. Maybe I should start putting a bit more effort into making the videos. And so that sort of became a thing. And for a while I sort of edged into it slowly. By now it's very sort of produced. Mm. I write sort of word by word scripts. I usually take my script and paste that in as the subtitles.
Oh,
that's sort of how on Word my scripts are.
Okay.
Yeah. There's not much going from just sitting like this, you know, talking into the camera, and then just having to go through 4 hours of material to find whatever's relevant.
Yeah, and that's tough sometimes to string it all together.
Yeah, and combining that with a lot of what people call B-roll, which is, I'd like to turn that phrase around and say that the painting is the B-roll.
You think it's not the A-roll? You think that's the B-roll?
It's the most visually dull thing.
Savage.
There's not a lot of action going on, I guess.
Exactly.
Just good point.
Yeah. No, but I try and mix it up. I try and tell stories as well, more than you know. If you haven't seen any of my videos, it's more story based than sort of tutorial based. I don't try and teach people many things. I try and just share my experience of being someone in this hobby, and how I experience it, sort of through stories. So it's, the scripts are exaggerated, but it's not lying,
right?
You know.
Right. What do you mean they're exaggerated? In what way?
I mean, it's more, it's got a storytelling edge to it.
Okay. You know?
So it's my thoughts and things that I experience, but I phrase it maybe more like it would be written in a book.
Okay.
To make it more exciting. Okay. Or you know.
There's a level of whimsy would be the word that I would use.
Very whimsical.
Yeah.
Okay. So you, before YouTube had and you still do have a career in professional photography.
Yes. Yes.
And you've worked with a lot of brands. I'm curious, what's like the coolest or the biggest brand that you've worked with, what project that you can talk about?
Ooh. Well, I've worked as a still photographer for probably, like, I think I've had my business for 15 or 16 years. And I think before that I did some work without the business. As a start, I started working for other photographers. like an apprentice. You work as an assistant to people that are marvelous at what they do, and you just hang around them and make them coffee, and slowly you just get to do more and more things.
Do you get paid to do that or no?
You get paid, but it's very symbolic. It's kind of like just so that you can pay your rent.
Okay.
So I think my entry,
it's symbolic. I like that.
No, it was very like, I think my first wage was about $600 a month.
Okay.
And after 4 years, I think I was out to about $1,000 a month.
So, yeah. You know.
But it's getting an education without, I don't have student loans.
Right.
I don't owe anyone any money.
That's true.
You know.
So you didn't go to school at all, right?
I haven't gone to any school, no.
Okay.
But throughout my career, I've been doing a lot of different things. I think what I think is the coolest is I had this project. I kind of want to keep it up. But that as well sort of toned down during the pandemic. But I've had a project where I take shoot portraits of musicians. Mm. And some of them have been people that are relatively famous. So for instance, I've hung out with a guy called Bobby Womack.
Okay.
For about 2 or 3 hours.
Okay.
While he's telling me stories, because he was a storyteller.
Okay.
Just because I was going to shoot his portrait.
All right.
And things like that. Another guy called Archie Shep, which is a jazz musician.
Oh.
I ended up sort of eating dinner with him, and he's playing his piano for me, and all these things, which is kind of cool stuff. To me, cooler than brands.
Yeah.
And just meeting sort of heroes, I guess.
Right.
Because I'm very into music, and so I just try to contact musicians I was interested in, and when they would come to Stockholm, I'd ask, can I take your picture?
That's cool. It's like you're combining your interests.
Yeah,
which I feel like a lot of us do, especially with YouTube and miniature painting and other kinds of things.
Yeah, and so that's some cool things I've done. I have worked with larger brands as well, like commercially, like most of them Swedish. Some that maybe you would know is maybe Motorola.
Yeah,
as a company I worked with a bit.
Definitely.
Stuff like that, but it's been very up and down. My favorite is probably working with other people that are creative.
Yeah.
So I've worked quite a bit with musicians, like for record labels, you shoot album covers or press pictures, stuff like that. Work with theaters, like take pictures of actors posters for the theater or museums, stuff like that. I enjoy being around other creative people.
Okay.
It's inspiring to see people that just sort of create things.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
It's easy to learn from
even
them.
If it's someone creating something on a stage, like creating music or creating things.
Okay.
So I think that's a common denominator.
Okay. So I got some questions for you.
Yeah, please.
So you obviously created something of a characteristic for your channel that the end results are higher quality videos.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like a little trapped by that? Do you feel like, whenever I make a video, I have to maintain a certain standard or else I'll kind of be letting down people that have subscribed to me? Or do you not mind doing that? Or how do you feel about that?
I think as with a lot of things, there's always a wish for escape.
Yeah.
You know? I wish I could do that and not what I'm doing. Sometimes I wish I could just fill my hands painting a miniature, not write a script, do a video in a day, be done with it. Not the fact that a video has to take 3 weeks to make because I have to run around and film so many weird things but then on the other hand, I know that I wouldn't be making the videos if it wasn't the 2 or 3 weeks running around filming all the weird things, because that's what I enjoy.
Okay.
You know? Mm. Sometimes it's just the, when projects takes too long, when something goes wrong, when you're just like, I'm sick of this, why can't I just do something simple?
Yeah.
You know? But I've given up being, which is not to be rude, but I try very hard to not give a shit of what other people think.
Yeah,
including my viewers.
Let me know when you figure that out.
I love them. I love my patrons, and it's so awesome to have people that watch my videos. But I know that from the start, I painted a lot of sort of Stormcast, Age of Sigmar things, And I haven't done that in a while. And I think probably a lot of people that started to follow my channel sort of started to follow me because I painted Age of Sigmar things, and now they're not watching my videos because I've been painting other things. And I don't mind that.
Mm.
And I started making dioramas, which maybe some people enjoy and some don't. I just try and make the videos and have the ideas that are things that I want to do in the moment, and then that's just going to have to be it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really important thing that sooner or later on this journey or any other passion project that somebody has in their life, that you realize that if you don't follow where your passion takes you, it doesn't matter how many people like it, you're eventually going to just stop.
You're going to burn out and die.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. And I still have certain leeway because it's not, I guess you could say it's my part-time job.
Yeah,
like money wise, it's mm-hmm. it's like half of the income. The rest comes from another job, mm-hmm. and even though that can sometimes entail tons of work when there's conflicting deadlines or whatever, mm-hmm. but I don't have to rely as much on getting views.
Sure,
you know, it doesn't control as much. You know, it's not like I won't be able to pay my rent if people don't watch my videos, and so I can probably be a little bit more flexible with the topics I choose. You know, okay. I don't have to paint the latest sort of Warhammer miniature just to get the views in. I can paint whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see a future of your channel where you are doing it full time? Is that an interest that you have, or are you kind of happy with the current arrangement right now?
I think in theory, I'm happy with the arrangement now. I just want more money.
Okay.
I mean, comparatively speaking, of like the time that I actually do put into the videos is pretty insane compared to what it brings back monetarily if we would see it as work.
Yeah,
if I work for, you know, pretty much every day for 2 or 3 weeks, and you know what does YouTube give me for that?
So yeah,
for $200, $300.
Basically, know? Yeah. If you're a viewer, you don't understand when you get like a video with 50,000 views on it, approximately. That's pretty much like $200.
Yeah.
In AdSense revenue alone, which is not the only payout that we get as YouTubers, but it's definitely. We were talking about this yesterday. We're talking to brands and like telling them like what our sponsorship costs are, and then them not thinking it's worth it. And it's like, yeah, hire a videographer to make an ad for your company and tell me how much it costs. Yeah. That's a minute and a half long video or whatever it is. Yeah. I'm going to make an entire video painting your model. I'm going to edit it. I'm going to shoot the videography for it. I'm going to do all that work. Like it's so much more than just the ad you're paying for. You're also paying for like my time, which would you'd pay any other professional doing a very similar thing. Yeah.
And that's something that I've had in my head because I have been doing videotography work for companies that are making videos for YouTube or Instagram.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I know what I charge them, and it's a lot more.
Are you comfortable saying? Because I don't actually know what you would charge.
I mean, it would be very different from company to company or whatever the work entails. But I would not do work for less than $100 an hour.
Okay.
And sometimes it's around more like $200 an hour.
Okay.
So imagine if you're filming something, company's doing something for a short ad. Just like we're not talking like Pepsi ad worldwide. We're just talking like local, local things like in Sweden or whatever. Then I might be working on that for 1 or 2 days,
mm-hmm.
or 3 days. And I charge that per hour. And that's what they put on Instagram or YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so that's more than I would make off of YouTube in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From
the 52 Miniatures channel, you know. Yeah. It's vastly different. Then on the other hand, this is very big companies. But on the other hand, there are some very big companies in our industry as well. Namely One, which in theory could be paying us.
But don't.
That kind of amount.
At all.
They don't even pay anything. Yeah. But that's a different story.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, why would you pay something that everyone's doing for free anyway? Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've had situation. These things going through my mind when dealing with like, should I do this because it's fun or because it's money or whatever. And I try, as I said, I'm really happy with the way things are and sort of how my life is structured with, because it's nice to have work that is not the channel as well. Mm-hmm. Because I get out, I meet people in different walks of life doing different things. That's a great bonus of being a photographer. You sort of meet lots of people.
It's kind of like a social job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I would probably miss that if I would be only doing the channel. But I would like my channel to grow and all the other things around it so that the time that I spend on it is actually like
fruitful.
What it should be.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Like a worthwhile time investment.
Yeah, because otherwise I think probably like if we say sort of long term, 3 or 4 years, eventually I'd probably be like, okay, this is, I need to spend less time making videos because it's not, you know, if it would just stay the same, because I'm putting a lot of effort in.
Okay. Which shows, and I think that was one of the reasons, I think very early on.
We all do, by the way. Yeah. No, we all do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I think that's, that gives me another thing on a dimension, but like very early on in your channel, when we were doing the podcast, I think we first brought up your channel here, mm-hmm. where we had found one of your videos, and we're just, and I remember yeah. thinking like, well, shit, I can't do videos like that. Yeah, I'm like, oh, yeah, I gotta send an assassin over to Sweden now to take care of this guy. But in relation to that, and I appreciate and I really like the like kind of a bloodline of a storyteller approach to your videos, and that comes across really well. Two questions I have on that.
Yes, please.
I'm already going to forget the second one, but that's okay. The first one is, do you feel like that approach to your video making has a connection to other, like other things that you enjoy in life? Because I know I watch your videos where you talk about books, and I am also an avid reader of books, yep. and I appreciate it. And I've actually read some of the books based on your recommendations.
Cool. Nice.
That form of enjoying a story is that kind of seeped into how you choose to make the videos, or is it you don't, or that wasn't a relation? Maybe there was a different reason why you go about the way that you do.
I think it kind of started with a bit of a not as an accident, but I was making the videos where I was just talking into the camera, mm-hmm. sort of rambling on, and some bits were funny and some, but I just realized the amount of repetition.
Yes.
And like how something that turned into 20 minutes could have been 5 minutes.
Yes.
And so that's when I started to, I should try write scripts and do voiceovers. Yes. And then I realized that actually, because I have been involved with script writing before, but more as a sort of, I'm not a script writer in the professional sense, but I could like in a filmmaking process, I could still have access to it and say like, maybe we should change the feeling of that bit, or like, no, the start needs to change, these kind of things. But I haven't actually physically been writing the script. And so this, especially not for myself. And I've always had a scare of writing. Like ever since school, it's like bad marks and, you know, not great at writing. And then I discovered that I actually enjoyed writing these scripts.
Huh. That was what first struck me when I saw, and I think I even commented on your videos very early on. I was like, you're really good at script writing. Like, yeah. These are, thanks. And I felt like this Swedish foreign person is better than me at script writing in my language. Like, what the fuck? I remember thinking that early on. So yeah, you definitely like inspired me to kind of like really think more about just like the way I structure a video and the way I present each detail of what I'm trying to talk about and the order I do it in all that stuff. You can really think a lot about that, like, and spend a while on it.
Yeah, and I started to realize things like I could write something in the script, like just a, you know, like a line, something that sort of sticks in your head, and then realize that I could sort of repeat that. So it's almost like writing speech.
Yeah, it's like a thesis,
because,
right?
Our videos are so short as well that it's almost like a well-written speech.
Kind of.
And there was all these things that I just realized I was having a good time when I was sitting there writing these little stories. And then obviously they have to be mixed up with like explaining what I'm doing and stuff like that. But going back and forth between like how much painting, how much story, can we talk about how we feel in the hobby versus I'm using the red paint now.
Right.
You know, and that was just fun. And so that's how that sort of just developed into what it is now. They take very long. I'm not going to say a very long time, but I, you know, it's at least 1 to 3 full days of work just writing the script, which is a bit silly.
It's I don't know if it's silly, but it's the reality of honing a thing to have the final product,
yes,
be true to what you want it to, yeah, be. And that's the kind of harsh reality of our kind of the what we work in on YouTube, is that you are rewarded for spitting out as much stuff as possible. Mm. And you are also rewarded for quality. And I think that you are a prime example of that, Alex, of the quality, yeah, will bring with it a level of weight and following. But it's so much easier to just be an OnlyHands channel, right? In theory, right? And put on the red paint.
Yeah.
And it's kind of putting more on the line in a way as well, because, you know, I might write something and it's not actually good.
Yeah.
You know, but people might not actually enjoy it.
Right.
You know, if you do something more, I'm not going to say simpler, and I'm not saying there's any good or bad. It's just we do different type of videos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you stick to a format that works, that is maybe simple, and people appreciate that, and they always come back and get what they expect, is pretty efficient. Whereas, mm-hmm, I can spend 2 days write a script, and in the end, like, it wasn't great because maybe I didn't write a great script.
Yeah,
you know,
it's more of a risk there for sure.
More of a risk in it.
Yeah,
but it's I have a lot of fun with the script, and so that turned into a thing itself, and then it just sort of snowballs into having to film footage that maybe works with the script, or,
yeah,
maybe the footage are already there. It just turns into this thing, which is so much, it's completely sort of organic, and there's no real structure in how I shoot things and what I need, and like there's no production, like I never do the same thing every time.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I just like but recently it's been a bit messed up because all of a sudden I got a lot of actual photography work, and at the same time I was going to come here.
Yeah.
And so I think my last video was up for like my last release was like 3 weeks ago, and I still don't have a new one.
Okay. Do you feel that pressure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially when there's a sponsor involved.
Yeah.
It's already been waiting 3 weeks too long. But no, I do feel that pressure. But I just... The video that I'm going to release, for some reason, I ended up, which is a completely different long story, went to a small town in Stockholm in a rented cabin, Airbnb thing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was there because I should have gone to another place to work with a person that couldn't do it. And so instead I went halfway to meet another person, to do some other work with that person. Anyway, so I was in this cabin and I thought, I should paint a miniature here because that would be fun.
Yeah.
And so I brought along paints, miniatures, mm-hmm, desk lamp, cameras, all of it, and just to be able to film some scenes of me painting in this cabin.
Okay.
And that wouldn't have happened if the other things in life wouldn't have happened. So it's not like it's a planned script.
Right.
Know? It's just, yeah. And that's sort of how my videos tend to be. They're sort of shaped around my own life and my own hobby experience, and I might hide that. It might just be, oh look, I was in a cabin painting because that was fun. But it's
like, no, yeah, I was here at this point in my life.
Yeah,
and this is when I have time to shoot, and yeah, so I'm gonna shoot now.
Yeah,
I don't. And you're kind of similar, John, and I think we're similar as well. Is that when we are planning out a video or painting a video, and you mentioned like the speed of YouTube, it's like sometimes I have to start painting this model because the process is gonna take hours, mm-hmm, and while painting it, I'm gonna kind of figure out what the video is about, right?
Yeah.
And so because of that, you have to kind of film everything because you don't necessarily know what you're going to end up using.
Yeah.
But at some point you'll figure out the purpose, and then that's going to inform like whatever script or outline you write like later on. But like for that model, like I say in the video, I was bopping around.
I don't know what this video is going to be about.
I didn't know. I was like, fuck, like I don't have an angle. Like the pizza boy had an angle with the comic book style, the one before that I had an angle, but this one didn't have one, and so I just ran with it. But yeah, it's you kind of discover that thing on the fly, and I think it's probably better to have that idea going into it because then you know what you need to film. It's like, for instance, when I had decided in my head that I was going to paint this model and talk about how to paint white stuff, I filmed a lot of palette footage of me mixing white paint into my paint and like how they compared and like stuff like that, because I knew that's what the video was going to be about. But if I was just filming a generic painting video, I would not have captured that, and I would have to have like reproduced it and faked it later on to capture it again.
Yeah.
So it's helpful to know going into a shoot, because then you can capture it in the moment. You don't got to redo stuff.
Yeah.
But like it very often doesn't turn out that way.
Right. Well, and I think that some of the most satisfying or the most rewarding aspects for me, and I totally relate to your idea of filming in the cabin, is not knowing and just like having your radar open to the universe as to what direction it ends up taking.
Okay.
You don't need to know, because it will find its way as long as you're open to listening for it.
Mm.
And
deep cut with John right now.
I don't think you have to. I think if you set yourself up and you took that footage and that story happened, you don't know how that story's going to end, because you don't know how the trip's going to end.
Mm.
Right. And that may influence how you don't know what was going to happen when you sat down to paint there, or maybe you go and turn on the faucet and the water's all rusty for your paint cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And like that is part of the story. Yeah. And you don't need to know the ending or the whole storyline to just begin. And I've kind of more leaned into that. And I think that like I enjoy it more. And I also think a big thing that it helps with is it helps the people that watch get to know you and then get connected with you.
Yeah.
Because if we're just the sea of YouTubers making whatever, people connect to a personality or a way a person teaches, or a way that they entertain, or a combination, or how they tell a story, and they become connected with that, and that like you shedding the need to keep painting Age of Sigmar is true to form there of showing that they don't need. They like the way you tell stories, and they like you. And so if it's you in a cabin, that's what they get.
Next to the fire.
Next.
I think it goes hand in hand what we were talking about before about painting, about experimenting. Hmm. You know, it keeps me interested,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps me going. Doing videos like that, same as that keeps my interest up. In the hobby as well, in painting, I think it goes hand in hand. The downside is, I guess, things can derail. Things can take longer than expected because it's not structured.
Yeah.
And so, as I said before, if it would be tighter with I need my videos to hit.
Okay.
Then maybe I'd be a bit more of a coward. I don't know.
Well, let's take a step back from videos for a second and focus more on the hobby.
Yeah, we've been derailed.
We've
been making the sausage, and y'all been watching.
I know. Yeah,
and this is—I never remember to take selfies. So let's, Scott, you keep talking, and I want to do a picture of us.
All right, I'll keep talking. So let's talk about the hobby. And Alex, let me know, like, how did you get into this? Did it start over the pandemic? Did you like were you into it as a little kid, forgot about it, and then came back to it? How did that work out?
Yeah, no, I think I was definitely into it as a kid. I don't know how the actual miniature painting started. I remember my dad painted me my first miniatures. He sort of somehow helped me get into fantasy. I think it started with like the Narnia books, probably.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then he read The Lord of the Rings for like as a bedtime story book.
Mm-hmm.
And about at the same time, I don't know my age, 10, 12, you know, no idea. There was this store in Stockholm that had, you know, all the weird fantasy stuff where there's skulls, there's swords, there's like...
You're familiar with this, aren't you, Joe?
Like, yeah, right, I know the store exactly.
Crystal balls.
Yes.
Like different jewelry that's shaped like dragons.
Yeah, dragons.
All this stuff. And they also had some miniatures. Metal miniatures. I think some kind of. I know there was like. There's a company called Ralpartha.
Ralpartha.
Sometimes it was like a wizard holding a little crystal ball. It was a real crystal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I know that store.
Yes. and so we bought. They had little hobbits.
Oh.
And dwarves.
Okay.
And a Balrog.
Oh.
Oh, this is like legit Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think even what was Donkey's name? Billy? Bill? No.
The horse.
Bill the pony.
Bill the pony. Yeah.
So there was a pony. And so I, for some reason, I just wanted them. And then I think somehow I realized I would not be able to paint them. So my dad helped me paint them.
Mm.
And this was using like Humbrol paints.
Oh, man.
Stuff like that. I still have them somewhere.
The original painted models?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever shown them in a video ever?
No, I don't.
Oh, you
no,
absolutely should.
Yeah.
I think I'd strip them.
I think, unfortunately, they've been like in a plastic bag and like maracas yeah. around and they're metal minis.
Yeah, so, yeah. Not looking too good.
And so then, so that was around. And then somehow the interest grew and Warhammer, which was then Warhammer Fantasy, entered the building.
Okay,
somehow.
So now you're like 16, 18, somewhere in there?
Probably a bit less.
Okay.
I'd say 14, 15.
Okay.
And I had a friend that also got into it, and he had an older brother that got into it. So the older brother was like, he played Magic, and he played Warhammer Fantasy. And we were younger, so we were like, we wanted to play Warhammer Fantasy. We saw him play Warhammer Fantasy. We said, we can't play Warhammer Fantasy.
It's very
we don't have the money
to
buy the miniatures, and the rules were just too complex.
Yeah, at the time, I think Fantasy was the most complicated game they made. Yeah.
And so we still collected the miniatures. I remember my friend collected Skaven. I collected mainly Chaos models. I remember saving up to this. There was a dragon, a two-headed dragon, with the Chaos Lord on top of it.
Okay.
Oh.
And I can't remember actually what he was called, but I remember, you know, saving up for like a year to go get this miniature.
Dang, dude. For a year.
Yeah, something like that.
I didn't have that kind of patience as a 14-year-old. Yeah.
And we would also, because my dad's from England, so we would sometimes go over to visit my gran, and like Warhammer in England at that time was like half price. Like the miniatures were half price compared to Sweden.
Oh.
So, you know, I'd save up my money and then I, you know, just buy heavy metal. Yeah.
Just bring it all back in a big heavy
dust. But it was like a collecting thing. And somewhere there was like, we should play the games, but we kind of didn't as much. I think we played a little bit of like one of the football games.
Blood Bowl
kind of a thing. Mm. But we did get Warhammer Quest.
Okay.
And I think a bit of Space Hulk, probably. And we were in on like the friends games, and that was sort of the level it was at. It was painting a little bit, but you know, the painting was still at the sort of, you know, not super advanced.
Were you painting whole armies and stuff, or you kind of just
never really got there? I was sort of like, I know I had, you know, I had like Chaos Knights on some kind of horses. There was like five of them, and then there was like five or something. There was an army being planned.
Sure.
But then somewhere around there, I stopped.
Okay.
Because all of a sudden, there was like beer and women.
Mm.
Yes. Or the thoughts of beer and women.
Right.
It's more appropriate. That's the more realistic version.
And then I just did tons of different things. The rest of my life happened.
What kinds of different things? Shrooms? Drugs?
Beer and women. Yeah. No, I went to school. Like high school kind of thing. And then I worked for like a year because I wanted to go traveling. Went to like Southeast Asia and stuff like that. Met a girl there that was from Australia. So I moved to Australia, lived in Australia for about 4 years, and then moved back to Sweden. That's when I started working as the assistant thing, as a photographer. And that's sort of just, that's all you do because you can't afford to do anything else.
Okay.
And then I got into photography and started working with that. And it wasn't until I used to sometimes walk past game stores,
mm-hmm.
and like you'd see the Warhammer box like in the window, and I'd like look at it and I'd look away and I'd keep walking. And then one day I actually didn't.
Okay.
And I walked in and I bought it.
Uh-huh.
And it was a Soul Wars box.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's like the kind of the lightweight starter set for Age of Sigmar,
yep.
right? Is that what it was?
Okay. Yeah. And it actually had 52 miniatures in it.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Is that the origin?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay.
I just like to picture Alex at his desk, and he's like, you could see on his screen where it's like start a channel, and it's just the cursor is blinking.
Yes.
And he's looking around his room for what the name of the channel should be.
Are you there, John?
I mean, that's a great reenactment, like, intro to a video.
That was actually what happened.
Oh, my God. I like the future Alex version better, but that's also good. Yeah.
I think I was what we call parental leave. But I did extended parental leave because I'm freelance, so I didn't work for 2 years and just hang out with my kid for 2 years.
Sounds like a good deal.
That was a good deal.
Yeah.
I don't know how it worked out with money, but it did.
Nice.
And it was sort of at that time period where I was like, you know, you're up late nights and stuff like that. I wanted something to do, and that's sort of kind of why I got it. And I started buying paints and painting miniatures, and realized that I enjoyed painting miniatures.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I don't think I actually enjoyed painting miniatures when I was a kid. That was more about the buying it and like the maybe the hope of trying to play with it, like the wish of being like the elder brother.
Yes. Or the setting them up and looking at them and imagining the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that part's fun.
Yeah. It's still fun to this day.
And that's when I just started. I remember... I realized that this was something I could get into. I remember one of the first things I watched was Tabletop Minions had a video with Sam Lenz that was like, this is how you wet blend or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was just about, he sat there and he was like wet blending. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. So like the first thing I did when I bought my first paint was like try and sit there.
You and him both just dive into the deep end of techniques.
But I didn't realize it was supposed to be like, I just thought it looked cool.
Right. Yeah. It seemed simple enough when Sam did it.
Yeah. And so then it just, that was just how it started. And then it just kept on going. Like I like to buy new products and things or try them out or try new techniques and just realized that painting was just a great way of getting out of this world for half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you work a lot, things happen, you know, and you can just, in the evenings, I could just shut everything off and just paint for half an hour and enjoy myself. And then I started a YouTube channel and all that went out the window.
I was just, that was the next question I was going to ask. I was like, is it still the same way for you? Is it still relaxing?
No, it isn't.
Not really. Damn.
I mean, it can be. I think it is when everything is just set up, because I pretty much film everything. Every miniature I paint is pretty much filmed. But when that's all set up, when you're actually sitting there and you're just painting it, it's still kind of the same.
Yes.
But it's not like it's not like I'm at my kitchen table and just pulling out some paints, doing something random. You know, you still, there's a camera, there's a plan, there's a video being made. But in the moment, I think it's still a little bit of the same. Yeah.
Yeah. How's that for you, John?
I have this weird thing recently that I've acknowledged, but I think I've been doing it for a while now. And that is you have kind of everything up for recording when you're painting and you're like, okay, I want to make sure I get a good shot of this. So it could be like painting the highlight of this over whatever. I get the shot of it. And then I turn the camera off and I finish doing that step all over the model.
Yeah, yeah.
And that part is so fun.
Yeah.
I did the same. Yeah.
So I was painting all of the filigree trim on this model a dark forest green. Mm-hmm. And that took a long time to do because I was like, I don't want to get it on the purple skin. I don't want to get it on the white cloth. So I had to be very meticulous. And so I filmed it for like 30 seconds and I was like, all right. Putting on a little music. I'm gonna paint this for an hour and a half now. Like, fuck this camera. So I definitely relate to that. But when I started to film minis, there was not a miniature that was not for a video or a live stream for like four years.
Yeah.
The first model that I painted not on stream that I can remember was for A Song of Ice and Fire. I was painting my characters for that game because I had found a game that I really enjoyed. And that really reminded me of the feeling of just not having any purpose for this model other than just to paint it and play with it. Yeah. And that was really refreshing. But I hope you can find that opportunity at some point and it feels right and stuff like that. But in our schedules, it's often very difficult. Or it's just like draining. You know, I don't necessarily want to go home and paint figures.
Yeah,
right. You know?
I think something I have been doing is assembly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just because then it can also be that I know that I need to have maybe 5 miniatures for a video, but I'm not going to film that step. It's just they're just going to get painted.
Yeah.
And so I have them at home. I might be sitting with my son, or just, you know, and it's more of a mechanical, and I feel like I can get into the same relaxing zone doing that, as long as I can find the bits on the sprue.
Right.
Yes. and understand the manual.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I think too, one thing that's, I think, benefit in disguise, blessing in disguise, that's the term, for us, is kind of opposed to maybe the goody peepees out there, is that because we have somewhat of a regiment or a schedule in creating another video in, or working on the next one, this, that, or the other, is I never feel like we're that far removed from sitting down and cracking open a bottle of paint and putting paint on model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you can look at that two ways. One, this requirement to do it, or two, I get to do this.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, it's a big struggle to find the time or to prioritize it, or it's easier to turn on the PlayStation than it is for me to sit down and start cranking out some base coats or whatever. Yep. And I value that because I don't ever feel that I'm too far away, you know, like I'm drifting too far away from it, because I'm always, you know, there's that rope that I can pull myself in easily. And I feel bad when people have drifted away from the hobby when it's not for a lack of interest or excitement in the hobby. It's just a matter of, it's just, I don't regularly get to put paint on model.
Opportunity.
And feel that. Whether it's just the joy of it, whether it's a relaxation, whether it's the excitement that it builds for when it's what you're working towards, all those kinds of things. I think that's really important. And so it's a thing that it's like I try to remind myself when I'm working through the 40,000 bullshit things on that orc's backpack. And it's just like, there's a lot crappier things I could be doing right now in my life.
Yeah, it's very true.
Absolutely. Frame of mind is really important. All right, cool. Well, it was wonderful to hear about your channel and the backstory for it. If you guys want to find links to Alex's channel and also his Instagram, we'll have them down in the show notes and description below, depending on where you're watching. But thanks for being a guest. Let's move on to the news now, eh?
Yeah. Well, right before the news, I am a little bit upset. I was really hoping that, and if I was, you know, a responsible adult at all, I would have talked to Scott about this prior, but I really wanted to set up that this our studio for today's shot would started with all the lights out, but just one random weird lightsaber light behind us. Because if you're, that's a joke that people that watch Alex's videos will get, because Alex will, he often looks like he's in some weird cave and there's like one random light there, but it's so perfectly lit. And I'm like, ooh, I'm here for it. I feel like I'm sitting around the hearth, right?
Okay.
Or in the hearth, because in Alex's.
And there's usually, I have these tube lights.
They look like lightsabers.
Sometimes it looks like there's a lightsaber going on in the background.
He's about to slash his head off. And it hasn't happened
yet. At least that's what John says when he watches.
Yes.
Oh, this is a comment you've made before? Okay. All right, well, I don't have those lights, so we're not going to do it. All right, out of the news. What's the first item on the list here? Let me pull up our news. This is super cool. Mantic announces their dive into an STL library available as themed packs or via subscription called the Mantic Vault. And according to them, the Vault isn't replacing our hard plastic sprues. This is going to be in addition and feature things like upgrades and other bits to customize or kitbash. It is live now. I looked at the website, and there are certainly full figures available in like these things. And it's basically Patreon without Patreon. And it's like My Mini Factory and Patreon, like you can, like those are two different things, or tribes on My Mini Factory. This is that thing, but they just made it themselves. You can buy the packs separate, or you can subscribe to get them like once per month. And the pack that I looked at had some arms and heads and stuff in it, but it also had like some terrain bits and also like full, like at least 2 to 3 full figures. It's kind of cool to see like a company essentially take on like the role of what you would see like an individual creator doing on Patreon with sculpting and stuff like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I like the evolution. I like that we kind of live in the golden age of miniatures right now. At least I feel so, that there's more options than
so
ever.
Yeah.
There's so many successful small and mid-sized companies, and there are avenues for these companies to reach the market and to be able to sell their things. Of course, we're in a global economy now too. That helps an awful lot. It's a massive benefit. When you're even talking about when you were a kid, the price difference between Sweden and England,
it was massive
to get miniatures and compared to today, where the distribution and the ability to 3D print or like just all these different things to be able to do that. And that's a cool thing.
It is cool. So I'm curious, do you do much 3D printing? I know you dabble.
Yeah, I do a little bit. Most of it has been just as a tool for when making videos. Like some sponsor might contact me and like, can you make videos on these miniatures? Mm-hmm. And so then I can say yes, because I can print them and they don't have to send them.
Nice.
I do print quite a lot of bits. I see it like a bit printing machine.
Yeah.
So I never really print miniatures, but I've like head swaps for kit bashes or like bits for terrain, like all of that kind of stuff. I have yet to like print a full army or anything. Yeah. I mean, I've yet to like paint full armies.
I mean, it's a lot easier to print one. Exactly. You can go to sleep while it's doing the work for you.
Yeah.
No, and especially for when doing small dioramas and just being able to like print the details, you can build some things, craft some things, but you can also put in the really nice detailed bits that you printed. And
yeah, I think that's it. That is our kind of combined goal of this, is to be able to print off whatever little thing that we want instead of the whole thing.
Yeah,
I feel like the whole things on the average are not that great. The little things, pretty sweet.
Yeah.
There are plenty of whole things that are cool.
You're speaking in tongues and mysteries right now.
When I say whole things, I mean like a whole miniature.
I know what you're saying.
Okay. I'm saying most models that are sculpted for 3D printing are garbage.
I probably agree with that. If you just like scroll through the typical My Mini Factory, like there is so much stuff. It's incredible. Like we kind of only see the things that come out on the coolest and nicest Patreons,
right?
Yeah. All right, cool.
All right, I want to talk about Corvus Belli. So
yes.
Corvus Belli just recently announced that they hit their 1,000th product created, I believe is the term that we got here. So they've released, maybe?
Yeah.
And they've done a cool article that we'll put a link down below to kind of the retrospective of their history as a company. And so kind of sharing their small garage startup business in Spain kind of a thing, and how their, you know, connection to this sci-fi universe that evolved into infinity and kind of where they're going from here, which I will tell you. I forgot my Warcrow minis. I was going to bring those. The bad guy Warcrow minis they sent me that I've not seen anywhere else.
Okay, that'd be cool to see.
I know, but I never bring them, so.
Yeah, I guess they detail the history all the way from like when they were like working on the back of a van to their first in-house plastic produced miniature called Vostok. That's pretty cool. Do you mess with Infinity Miles at all?
I have done a few.
Corvus Belli?
Like half of my Stargrave crew is Infinity.
Okay, nice.
It's a good model range for Stargrave.
It really is. Yeah.
It is. They're so small.
They're so small.
And the details are so small.
So small.
So sometimes it's like, what am I even painting? It's difficult to paint at times. But especially for that kind of setting, like sci-fi, aliens, but not really freaked out.
It's a lot of armor panels.
I made the mistake once. One of my terrible contrast paint mistakes in my life was painting my first, and to this point only, but I still very much liked it. I painted an Infinity figure on Scott's Twitch stream, and I'm like, well, they're so small, so many little fine details, but they're all well defined. This would be a great model for contrast paint. It was not.
The details are too small.
Because you're like, okay, if I want to put like the really dark blue on this panel and this panel so it'll contrast and have a good whatever, and then the contrast paint's like, fuck you, no, I'm not going over there. And it just like, meow, it just runs over, it goes down the crevice beautifully, and then it just like, bloop, goes over the edge and goes. And you can't unfix that with contrast paint. Especially it was like, I'd done it all like, oh, it's going to be like almost a cream white and then this dark colors or whatever. And it's like, well, I can't bring that white back unless I have to go back and paint it again and fix it up. And it's like, why was I using contrast paint? Mm. But they're beautiful models, they are. And I'm excited to paint more of my ninjas. So
yes, yes. Next on the news, we have GW's Armies on Parade marches ever onward with their brand new character called Best of Leviathan, which I believe is the newest starter set for 40K, right?
Yeah, this just appears to be their kind of in-house marketing more for the product launch and wanting more people to
paint the box,
paint and show off the stuff that's in there, so people, it keeps top of mind, more people buy it, yada yada yada, which is cool, or whatever,
or whatever.
So Scott, let's talk here about Apex Legends, the board game and Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Is that what your mini is from?
Yeah. So Glass Cannon Unplugged made it as a board game. And this is my favorite Battle Royale game because it's so fast and snappy and it's first person. I played PUBG, I played Fortnite, and I really prefer the first person shooter view. But also it's just so fast paced. And so I really enjoy this one the most. And they reached out to me and they were like, do you want to paint a model for the board game? And I was like, absolutely. Give me Bangalore. That's my main. I always play as Bangalore. And so I get to paint her. I don't know what skin I'm going to paint her in, but I'm really excited to like look through all the skins they have for Bangalore. They have one that's like, she's like a cop and she has like these sick like Ray-Bans. Mm-hmm. And I don't, the model doesn't have Ray-Bans, but I was trying to think, how would I make miniature sunglasses? I don't know.
3D print them.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So I want to see if I can figure out how to make her some cool cop glasses and give her like her navy blue fatigues that she has in that particular skin. But yeah, there's a lot of cool things in the game that I haven't played, but I'm interested in. Their shooting system takes into account gun recoil, which I've never seen that in a game before, and that sounds super interesting. There's lots of really cool elements in the game that remind me of the video game, like the little drop pods that have like special weapons, and then they have to go and find. There is like every character has their special abilities, which is always really cool. So that was really fun. I was excited for that. Next on the list, we have BattleTech announcing a brand new beginner's box called the BattleTech Essentials. It's available. Oh, it's a Target exclusive box and is now available for pre-order and is estimated to ship in mid-June. It's got two models, tokens, some rules, and a battle map and more. So BattleTech is really going from this game that's like super complicated, takes hours to play, and they've made like a simpler version called like Alpha Strike, I think. And now we're at the Target release, which has
Target
two,
level.
Yeah, Target level BattleTech. Like, what does that even look like? Nice. That's cool. They're trying to appeal, trying to get more of an audience, more outreach. That's interesting.
Do you have Targets in Sweden?
We don't.
What?
Oh, wow.
We'll
talk to some people.
Please. Target started here in Minnesota.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah.
We can make it happen.
We can. Yeah.
Look, we got IKEA.
So why don't we have
Targets? It's only a fair swap.
Let's trade. Yeah.
It's a fair swap.
Imagine if you could get miniatures at IKEA.
Whoa. Oh, man, those would be the shittiest miniatures.
Assembly would be terrible.
Well, I mean, they'd come with all the tools you'd need.
They'd be made out of OSB, and you could like put them together with like knockdown hardware. It's like the legs, like a little screw.
Yeah, it's just the little wooden pegs, the pegs that go together to fit them together.
Yeah.
Everything comes with a tiny little hex wrench.
Got a hex wrench, man.
Oh man, there's so many scripts for skits are just. And just falling into place.
If IKEA made models, there you go.
I think it's universally a good thing that like big box stores and the Barnes and Nobles exclusives, the Target exclusives are coming, because it's showing the growth in the kind of permeation into normie culture of people being more open to this. And I think a lot of this really comes down to board games, the sheer success with games that are board games that are miniatures has kind of opened the doors to a lot of this stuff. So I think it's great. I wish them all the success. And then, you know, maybe one day I'll talk less crap about BattleTech. No promises. Speaking of new things, there's a new starter set for Warhammer Underworlds that we just learned about. And they've tweaked the rules, simplified, kind of streamlined, improved the rules, apparently. But most importantly, this new starter set box comes with Stormcast and the amazing Skeleton Warband.
Sepulchral Guard.
OG Sepulchral Guard.
Yeah.
Old skeletons, best skeletons. I like these guys so much. And I'm just like, oh, that's an excuse to be able to get those skeleton models that have been out of production for a long time.
Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, this is a classic warband. I have a set. I did read through this article, and they made a couple of changes that I was really a fan of. They have a pre-con scenario for you to run through that has all of the steps already predetermined. So if you want to really learn how to play the game, it's like a really like way it like handholds you so well.
It's a 52-page rule book.
Oh my God, it is. You come full circle.
Right.
These are the same factions in the box you bought, right? Like kind of undead and Stormcast?
Oh yeah.
What the heck? Yeah,
you need to that was Nighthaunt, but it's
okay,
still
nerd, still calm down.
You need to open up a second channel where you just do all your book reviews and it's just called 52 pages.
Yeah. Indeed. Oh my gosh, I love that.
There we go.
I think the one thing that's kind of a missed opportunity with this release, and I'm not sure if this is the case, but I don't think they updated the warbands in here to like be and to have all these new fancy rules, because for the longest time my issue with Underworlds was every single season that came out introduced new mechanics, and so every single warband at that time was a snapshot of all the rules that were currently in Underworlds, and so every warband that came out in the future got better and more cool and more interesting. And so, like, this is literally the very first. This is Shadespire remade.
Yeah.
This is the first one. This is what everyone thought the game was actually called when it came out. Yeah. Oh, you're playing Shadespire? It's like, no, it's Underworlds. But I don't think they updated these warbands to have, like, new and fancy rules. I think they're just, like, the same thing as they used to be. But I could be wrong about that. I obviously don't have access to the rules. But that's one thing. All right, cool. Broken Animal Paints, they ran their Kickstarter for their paints, and it is successfully funded. So everyone who invested in that is going to get some cool new paints from them.
That's great. I think I like the paints. I'm glad that they had success. I like when companies that we know that are good people and they make a cool product that we like, that it's successful. So congratulations, team.
Absolutely.
Last news item is Luke from Geek Gaming Scenics has said he's not longer going to be making YouTube videos. Yeah. I've talked to Luke a fair bit. I'm sure most of us have, because he's the kind of guy who sort of calls you up.
Yeah, he does.
You sort of like you ask him something, and he's like, all of a sudden your phone's ringing, and it's like, it's Luke. Okay, I've never spoken to this person before. And then you answer the phone, it's like this really awesome, friendly guy.
Yeah.
And he's done so many things. He's done so many videos, and he said that, you know, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just like kind of part of his arc of his life that he was, I know that, you know, was struggling with things. He has had a lot of balls he was juggling.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he just kind of, you could see over the last probably year, or even 2 years, a little bit of like grating on him and not giving him the joy that it used to, or getting out of what he was putting in. And it's too bad. You know, we're going to miss him, but, you know, we're still going to bother him if and when we're on the other side of the ocean.
Totally.
Yeah. So he ran and operated Geek Gaming Scenics, but now he's also no longer going to do that. But that's the company is still existing. It still has all its employees that it had previously and still making product and stuff like that. He's like, I just want to get a job as like maybe like a camera op or something related to like video creation where I have just one responsibility. And so he went to an interview, got a job immediately because they were like, you do all of these things? And he was like, I can, yeah. But like, I just do this one thing I'm trying to get hired for. But yeah, he got a job like immediately. So he's looking forward to just having a more of a simple life, which I definitely understand and can resonate with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, there is, you are the one in everything for anything to get done in this. Yeah. And that has its pros and cons, you know, that it's beautiful to be able to be like, I am beholden to no man, right?
Man.
I can do whatever I want, but then it also means I have to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And it can be heavy sometimes, and I understand that that he's ready for a new chapter. So we wish him well. Luke's affordable paint service.
Luke APS, baby. Yeah.
And you could, you know, we'll put a link down to Luke's channel down there. That stuff is going to live on forever. He's got things that, like, I know I'm going to go back to. All his terrain building stuff, his board building stuff. He's so many great things. I'm going to go watch that video with his brother in the tighty-whitey underwear at least at least once a year when I'm drunk, I'm gonna go just gonna turn that on, and nothing will make me happier than Luke's commitment to the video, to where his brother is sitting right over his shoulder, butt ass naked, other than his little tidy whities, and he is committed to what he's teaching you about this PVA glue and sand. Okay,
yeah. one take. All right, there is no second take.
He changes the camera angle later, and he's behind him from a different spot. He's still there.
He's like actually trying to get into the camera frame.
Oh man.
Yeah. All the luck and love to Luke.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Ready to end this podcast, boys?
Oh yeah. We're going to end it because we are hungry for chicky tendies. And if you're listening right now, that means you made it all the way to the end of the podcast. We appreciate you for doing that. And if you wanted to support the podcast, you could join us over on our Patreon. So you just look up Trapped Under Plastic over there and you get some extra rewards, like an extended version of the podcast that we just finished filming, where the most R-rated content with Alex here was happening.
We all got naked. It was great.
Yeah. He touched my arm two times.
There were sparklers as well.
Swedish style.
Yes. Swedish style. There was meatballs involved, apparently. you can support us over there. That is the biggest way that we can kind of support the podcast to continue to go. But there are other ways that you can support us. Scott, what are some of those other ways?
You can also support us over on Teespring, where you can pick up some of our merch that we got listed there. That and also the Patreon are all linked down in the description below. If you don't have any bucks to spend, that's totally okay. We have free ways to support the podcast just by sharing our podcast around with your friends, your mom, your dog, your grandma. She'll love it, I swear. You can review us on wherever you listen to podcasts. That's also very helpful. Also, if you want to watch our podcast on like a whitelisted browser where it plays YouTube ads for our channel specifically, there are add-ons that allow you to do that. And we run an ad every 30 minutes. And so get that ad, and they'll give us a little kickback whenever that happens.
So we've had a blast with Alex today, and Alex already did shout out the name of his channel, which is 52 Miniatures. So make sure you go and subscribe to that YouTube channel if you aren't already. Mm-hmm. You'll thank us later. Alex, as is customary, when we have a guest on the show, we put the great weight of final words of wisdom for everyone to live by and make their lives better with you here now. Ready, go.
Oh, dear.
This is not a custom. John is putting on the spot now.
I just say that it was a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to meet you both.
Mm-hmm.
And please slay the gray.
There it is.
Okay.
We can see which one he prefers. Okay.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode, and we'll catch you on the
Flippity Flop.